is Coast to Coast AM, and I'm Art Bell. Back from the flu, sort of. And I say sort of because I've still got a temperature running around 100, but we've got a lot to do, so let's get down to it. A powerful earthquake, as you know by now, rocked the Northwest today, shattering windows, showering bricks into sidewalks, sending terrified crowds running into the streets of Seattle and Portland, Oregon. Despite the 6.8 magnitude, damage and injuries were relatively minor, which experts attribute to the quake's depth. About 75 people treated in hospitals in Seattle and Olympia. There was one fatality they're attributing to a heart attack. Still, the quake temporarily shut down the Seattle airport, knocked out power for hundreds of thousands of people, cracked the dome atop the state capitol in Olympia, and briefly trapped about 30 people atop the swaying Space Needle, 605 feet above the city. That must have been quite a ride for those folks. Let's get straight to it. We've got a number of people lined up to talk to you. First is Jim Berkland. You know Jim very well indeed. He was the county geologist for Santa Clara County for 20 years. As far as I know, back then, the only official county geologist. And I want to get a word or two from Jim about what happened today. Jim Berkland, hey, how you doing?
Howdy, Art. Well, this is pretty big news, and those that watch the website know that it was predicted by my site master, Will Fletcher.
In what manner was it predicted, Jim?
It was the second highest tide period of the month. What I call a secondary window. I handled the primary windows, and he handles the secondary windows, which then constitute half of the time. But if you go back for the start of the year, we have had seven major quakes, and seven of seven have been in a window. And chance would say, you know, only half. And there have been 11 quakes of at least 6.6, counting today's. And 10 of the 11 have been in the window, far exceeding any chance.
Well, while the news officially here, the Associated Press, sort of seems to suggest there wasn't a lot of damage. I was watching CNN actually when the story broke, and I've watched the damage from the helicopters all day long, and the damage to me looks pretty damn bad.
They're talking a billion, and I could believe it.
$1 billion, yeah.
Yeah, and remember they said only a few injured. Now it's up to 250 injured and one death. It's a lot more facts will come out as people see them.
Why was this so damaging?
Well, because it was so big and so close to town. The only fortunate thing is that it was 30 miles deep instead of 12 miles deep like the World Series quake was.
If it had been 12 miles deep instead of 30, what would have been the difference?
Maybe 1,000 deaths.
1,000 deaths.
Yeah.
And the magnitude measured at the epicenter then?
Well, 6.8. We've heard everywhere. It started out as 6.2, 6.1. And
No. I was asking a dummy question, and that was, if it was closer to the surface, would the magnitude measured have been greater?
No, but the intensity would be greater. That's where the popular confusion is. Intensity is what happens to people and things. And, for example, intensity 5, small objects knocked over. Intensity 7, chimneys cracked and some toppled. And people feel it in motor cars. They used to have the old modified Mercalli scale. But it's the energy is measured by magnitude. And so every quake should have just one total energy. It's like how many sticks of dynamite were involved. Then for the intensity, it was how close were you to the explosion, what kind of wall was between you and the explosion, that sort of thing.
And then is the Richter scale, in a way, I'm just sitting here thinking about what you're saying, is the Richter scale really a totally reasonable way to predict how much damage there's going to be by the Richter reading?
Well, they're related, but you could have a Richter 8 out in the middle of the Pacific, far away from any islands, and if it didn't have a tsunami, well, you wouldn't have any damage.
Oh, yes, but I'm just referring to the depth now. The same given area, if the depth is different, the damage is going to be very different.
Yeah. The deeper the quake, the better it is locally. But the more widely, the greater section of the Earth feels the quake.
So then being as close to Seattle as it was, if it had been at 12 miles, they'd have been that many miles closer to the epicenter, it would have been
exactly.
That much worse. Oh,
exactly.
I'll be doggone. I just learned something.
Uh-huh. Now, you may remember about 4 years ago, they had an 8-magnitude quake down in Bolivia. It was felt in Toronto. Felt in Texas. There never was a South American quake felt in North America before, but it was so deep, and it was like 600 miles deep.
I remember that
quake.
Yeah.
But it didn't do any damage in Bolivia. You know, everybody just took a ride.
Well, there sure was a lot of damage in this one. Boy,
oh.
I'll bet you the people in Seattle really, really are kind of on edge tonight. And if you'll pause 1 second, I've got one of those people right here. Peter Davenport, well known to most of my listeners, is where else, of course, at the National UFO Reporting Center in Seattle. Morning, Peter.
Good good evening, Art.
That's right, it is evening still.
It was quite a ride this morning, and I've just learned about all I know about earthquakes from Jim's description of magnitude and intensity.
Good.
All I can tell you is that I'm glad it wasn't the magnitude and the intensity were no greater than they were this morning, because we had quite a ride up here.
Well, what kind of ride? Describe it.
Well, several things. There was an initial shock. And within a second or two, I looked at my watch. It occurred about 10:54:40, 54 minutes and 40 seconds after 10
o'clock. Great presence of mind.
Pardon?
Great presence of mind to be able to look at your watch.
Well, time. I was running from the windows when that occurred. I hit the power button on my protector, the power transformer up here for my computer, and headed for the center of the building. One thing I noticed, Art, I had a tall stack of newspapers stacked against a southern wall,
right,
and they were quickly propelled to the north. But interestingly, I had a pair of snow skis perched against a northern wall, quite precariously, it turns out. They weren't disturbed at all. It quickly led me to conjecture that the shock may have come from the south of Seattle, and apparently that was the case.
Is that a reasonable assumption, Jerry?
Very, very good. That's how the original seismograph by the Chinese a couple thousand years ago was divided.
Really?
The little lion's heads, dragon heads with a little ball, and then they would drop off in a little pot. And whichever pots would have the ball in them, they know the direction was the opposite.
There you go, Peter. Dead on.
We had a cheap one. I've actually seen those devices in Peking. They're very interesting, and I'm not sure we've improved all that much in the last 2,000 years.
Clearly not an earthquake prediction.
Yeah. Interestingly, there was a stirring sensation to this, and that's reinforced by the fact that some of the drawers in my desks, which run east and west, were also slightly ajar. And I've spent all day trying to figure out how to come up with an equivalent or an analogy to what happened. But the closest I can get is being a grain of sand in the bottom of a gold panner's gold pan as he swirls it with water. The pan going one direction, the water going another, and the grain of sand still in a third direction. It was really a very, very interesting experience. I'm sure people who have been through these know perfectly well what I'm talking about, and of course scientists understand it, I'm sure, too.
A feeling of helplessness.
Exactly.
Wow.
I found there were both physical sensations and shortly thereafter psychological or emotional reactions, like being propelled into a different part of space or time in a matter of a few seconds.
And you'll re-experience that over the next few days, wondering if you've just had another quake.
Yeah, I've sensed that already, Jim. At 11:34 this morning, just about 40 minutes after the original event, I was sitting on my couch watching the news, and I had the sensation of another shock, but apparently the seismology lab here at the University of Washington, not 15 or 20 minutes walk from where I'm sitting, recorded that there were no aftershocks, so I would chalk that up to a psychological reaction.
Oh, yeah, that's very natural.
Your house not cracked? You got away with all this? Or
not as far as I know. I actually was moving away from the periphery of my apartment, assuming that the part closest to the center of the building would be the most durable. But that gives our listeners some idea of just how intense this was. And, you know, we really, really dodged a bullet up here this morning.
Mm.
The overseer to this planet chose to smile on Seattle this first day of Lent, I believe, because just 8 hours before this quake occurred, we had 50,000 or so young people in downtown Seattle engaging in all sorts of debauchery, and that was the heart of the area of the city where most of the damage occurred.
You know what, Peter? My wife said, see, they did it. They didn't quit at midnight the way they were supposed to, and now look.
Well, there have been a lot of reports of edgy and antagonistic people and road rage. I have, on my website, a number of people reported these things from the Northwest in the last week.
Yeah. Well, that comes under the category of the emotional part of this. Listen, I'm way short on time. Peter, I want to thank you, brother.
Thank you.
I know you were right in the middle of it, and Take it easy the next few days.
It was quite a ride. We got lucky this time. Thanks for the time.
Take care, Peter. And I'll tell you what, if you'll hold on just a moment, Jim, we'll get right back to you.
Okay.
All right. Stay right there. Jim Berkland, who was a county geologist for Santa Clara County for 20 years, will remain with us through the half hour. Ghost to Ghost will happen tonight. Bear with us. Yeah, that kind of a night, huh? Good morning. This is Art Bell once again, and here is Jim Berkland again. Jim, the interesting thing that I thought Peter hit on was the emotional aspect of this.
Oh, right? Yeah.
You know, what it actually does to your psyche. The earth moving under your feet is the most out-of-control feeling I've ever felt. We had a 7.3 here in the desert that really rocked and rolled us, so I know exactly what it feels like.
Well, the World Series quake of 7.1 is the only quake that ever frightened me. I wasn't too sure the county building was going to withstand it. And I had those same, Vietnam reflash,
flashback.
Flashback, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, and they last for a long time. But there were also flashes ahead, and you mentioned when you talked to me earlier today about one you had, but here's a couple that I had. This is February 26th from Jeannie and Maltby. Just returned to the vet with Mountman, her dog. A clean bill of health. His depression is not related to anything physical. Now I have to clean my bird cages tonight, and I'm dreading it. All of them are cranky, and I'm not looking forward to getting bitten. I'm experiencing right ear pain as I coast right now and have had strange pains on the top of my head intermittently today. I don't usually get headaches on the top of my head, and every time I think it's going to really develop into something, it goes away. I honestly have a feeling something local is brewing. And then the next day, from Georgia, Digital Dave, the biggest something just hit me that I've ever experienced. It lasted at least 60, maybe 90 seconds, and happened at 04:01 Eastern Standard Time. In all seriousness, I could barely move while it was happening. I'm sending out an alert because if it is a quake, it's a really bad one. And I got about 10 responses to that by other people.
Now, I have no idea what to attribute this predictive capability to. I don't have the slightest idea, but we are creatures like the ones that run around before earthquakes, you know, the little four-legged ones.
Electromagnetic.
Yeah, we're creatures too. That's right, coming back to that again. I've got something I want you to hear, so just take a listen to this. This was on my show February 12th of 2001. In other words, what the hell's today? Let's see. Today is going into March 1st. And springtime approaches. So this wasn't right on the money, but this was as close as you're going to want to get. This is a caller to my show. This is why we took predictions on the air only. It was a caller to my show, 212-01. Listen to this. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Yeah, hi, Art. This is Reba calling from Colville.
Hello, Reba.
And I'm calling because my prediction is something that I've seen for the last 17 years, and that is that there will be a devastating earthquake. I know it will be Seattle area, but I believe it will be the entire West Coast. And this spring, and it will be in the morning on a bright, beautiful, sunshiny day.
Wow. Anything that would be in the Seattle area and would affect the entire West, well, I don't know how much of Seattle would be left.
I don't know either, but it's very alarming, and that's why I moved all the way to Colville.
Colville, huh?
Yep.
And you think you would escape there?
And I'm all the way up on the 3,500-foot level.
So you honestly made a decision to leave the Seattle area because you were worried about an earthquake?
I saw it vividly. I saw what happened to my mobile home.
What did happen to it?
It was destroyed. It was destroyed. And
what far more mobile pieces?
It was flat. I mean, it went down a hill and it was flat. And the funny thing was that when they disconnected my mobile home from the foundation,
yes.
That very night there was a 5-point quake in Auburn. And my mobile home slid back and forth on the bricks, you know, the bricks that are underneath it.
Yes, yes.
Scared the living daylights out of us so bad we didn't spend the night in the house. But that is what I saw. And I've seen it over and over. And every time I see it, every year that goes by, it's like I'm closer to the leaves on the alder trees. And it's like I couldn't be any closer now than if I became the leaf. So And I do believe that it's possible that Popo is involved in this. All I know is that, what is it? We will feel it all the way over here.
Well, that might be enough for me.
So
I think I'd probably
it was serious,
yeah, myself.
Yeah, it was serious enough that I moved here 5 years ago, and I couldn't get out fast enough. And I made sure that I was up at the 3,500-foot level when I moved.
And you now believe it to be very close?
Oh, yes.
Well, I'm sure all the people listening in Seattle are real happy to hear this.
Well, I should think to be forewarned is to be forearmed.
It is. But, I mean, if you have, you know, a house you've paid a lot of money for and have a big mortgage on and a job and the kids are in school and you're really involved in your community, it's not necessarily something you want to hear, but fair enough.
Oh, I believe that the kids will be out of school by the time this happens, or at least I hope so.
Mm-hmm.
I do hope so. And I hope people take it serious.
All right. Sleepless, I'm sure, in Seattle. Thank you. All right, there it was. How do you account for predictions like that?
20 years ago, I would have said, oh, that's just coincidence. But I have become a believer. There are such things as psychic people. I've seen a number of these psychic predictions come true. And that was so close.
I know.
Yeah. Just like these, well, on my website there, syzygyjob.com, people can see what people have been saying. So they're all the past messages are there. And the birds were going crazy. And
nobody's ever going to remember syzygyjob.com. So we're getting a link up. If you would, please, Keith, get a link up.
Let me tell you what happened. The last time there was a quake almost as strong. I mean, it was stronger than this. You have to go back to 1949 on April 13th. The day after the eclipse of the moon and the day after the closest approach of the moon for the month, there was a very good seismic window. This earthquake caused heavy damage over a wide area in Washington and Oregon. 8 persons were killed. Many were injured. Total damage was estimated about $25 million in 1949 dollars. At Olympia, nearly all large buildings were damaged and water and gas mains were broken. A half-mile section of a 300-foot cliff toppled into Puget Sound near Tacoma. Many towns reported toppled chimneys, cracked walls, and fallen plaster. Felt area extended eastward to western Montana and southward to Cape Blanco, Oregon, magnitude 7.1. Now, I understood this one was felt in Salt Lake City, which really is a long ways away.
But that's long ways
how
away.
Deep it was, yeah.
Yeah. Jim, what is ahead? Is there anything else major that we should be watching out for anytime soon?
This is a bad year. Having 7 magnitude 7s already. And in 1989, when we had the World Series quake, we only had 6 major quakes all year. And here's 2 months, and we've had 7.
But again, immediately ahead, Jim.
Yes. March 7th through 14th is the next really good window.
Hmm.
And I'm going to call it a seismic window. And again, I'm just getting out my newsletter tomorrow. It'll be in the mail. And I'm calling for another 3 to a 5.5 in the Seattle area.
Again, and Seattle, gee.
Yeah. But after this, I mean, I wrote this up before the main shock, and so you're bound to have aftershocks, even though they're quite correct in saying with these deeper earthquakes you get fewer aftershocks. That's because down there there's less water, and the pressure is so great, it usually doesn't give you smaller quakes. It waits until it gets enough energy to give you a big quake.
Asking you why we're having so many quakes, in fact, they're all around me. I don't know if you've been watching the maps, but
yeah,
they're all around. Oh, man. So asking you why we're suddenly having so many, probably not a productive question, huh?
Well, yes. We're at a solar max. That's one thing. If you took the greatest solar flares in the last 30 years, tied for fourth place, were two in 1984 and in 1989, and both were within 2 days of the strongest two quakes in the Bay Area since 1911.
All right, hold on to something strong, folks.
Yeah.
How do people get your newsletter?
Well, they can send me a sample. I'll send them a sample copy. If they send me a business-sized envelope with a couple of dollars in it,
uh-huh,
and I'll mail them a recent copy of Syzygy. They must mail it to P.O. Box 1926, Glen Ellen, just like the wine, two words, G-L-E-N, capital E-L-L-E-N, California, 95442.
442. Do it again real fast.
P.O. Box 1926. Glen Ellen, Cal, 95442.
All right. Jim, thank you so much for coming.
My pleasure, Art. Sure, great to have you back.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Good night, Jim.
Night.
That's Jim Berkland, who was the county geologist, the official one for Santa Clara County for 20 years. And I don't know what to tell you up there in Seattle. Hang on, folks. I'm Art Bell, and from the high desert, this is Coast to Coast AM.
East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach out at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to call out on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903.
That'd be me, all right, and it certainly is a weird night. Nights are strange. I can't tell you what's different, but certainly isn't the same as the daytime, is it? Good morning. Covering what has happened in Seattle, and in a moment, covering something that happened in Florida that connects directly to the Ghost to Ghost show that we're going to be doing tonight, so stay right where you are. Dark nights just like these, huh? My affiliate in Cleveland, Ohio, is one of the nation's great old gigantic clear channel radio stations, WTAM 1100 in Cleveland. For that same radio station, there is a reporter. Mark Schwab is his name. That's S-C-H-W-A-B. He's a sports news and sports reporter. And I began getting faxes, emails and faxes, a couple of weeks ago, maybe not that long ago, and as we were contemplating the Ghost to Ghost program, people would write and say, did you know that there was a major incident with a sports reporter for WTAM? And I kept getting them, and finally, of course, I decided to call WTAM in Cleveland and find out what was going on. And here's the guy who can tell us, Mark Schwab. Mark, welcome.
Top of the very early morning to you, Art, from
and
Central Florida.
To you as well. WTAM had sent you to Florida to do what?
Cover the Indians. Spring training. We're the flagship home of the tribe, and the Indians happen to be my beat. So when spring training rolls around, I pack up, head to Winter Haven, Florida, where they practice and get ready for the season, and stay there until the season starts.
Oh, well, so then you're the guy who kind of looks them over and gives Cleveland a preview of what their team might or might not do.
Exactly.
Uh-huh. How do they look, by the way?
On paper, they're excellent. On paper, they're excellent. They lost some guys, they brought some new guys in, and now, you know, it's whether or not the new faces blend with the old, the team chemistry clicks, and a few questions in the pitching staff get ironed out, but there's so many question marks that a few of the ifs are bound to pan out, so they should be all right this year.
All right, so how long then? You stay there a total of how long?
I flew in February 15th. I go home March 30th.
What did you do, rent an apartment or stay in a hotel or what?
They went to a country club and rented one big house for all of us to stay in, because I'm down here, and then eventually our show hosts will trickle in. Oh. And they'll do shows from down here, so there'll be more than one of us here eventually. There'll be two, three, four, five of us. So they just rented one big house and put us all in there.
One big house.
One big house.
And therein lies, I guess,
the issue.
Actually, I've got to tell you, now, my emails could have been wrong, but they said that you got so scared, so freaked out over whatever it was that was happening that you refused to stay in the house.
Yeah, it got to the point I left one morning at 4:15 in the morning after hearing about an hour's worth of stuff. And, yeah, it was kind of funny because I'm so skeptical and hard-headed about this kind of stuff. I still don't believe in it. I guess, I don't know. It was, I'm usually the first person to tell someone they're an idiot or on crack when they say their house is haunted. So it took a bit for me to, finally get out of there.
Well, it's a long trip from they've got to be on crack to I'm out of here.
Yeah.
So what the heck happened?
All right, I flew in on a Thursday, which was the 15th. The main event, I guess you could say, it really started to hit the fan on Sunday night. But for the 4 days prior, I just noticed it was a noisy house. You know, some houses are noisy. Appliances are loud, or you'll hear creaks or whatever, and those are just house noises.
Yeah, I've been in houses with bad pipes, and they're creepy. They make creepy sounds.
Yeah. It was weird, though, because I'd be in the living room on the couch, and it would sound like somebody was walking in the bedroom down the hall.
Uh-huh.
It sounded like there would be a second person in there. But I just wrote it off as noise and figured, you know, whatever. You're the only one here. Just don't worry about it.
And you knew you weren't doing lines of crack or whatever.
Yeah, you know, and I was. Yeah, I don't. I've never touched a drug in my life, and I barely drink. So,
all right. So,
So let's get through 4 days of that, and then Sunday night, technically Monday morning, 3:04 a.m. An alarm clock goes off, and I thought it was mine at first because I had to get up at 7. Looked up, wasn't 7 o'clock, and it wasn't my alarm. It was one in a bedroom down the hall, a room that I hadn't been in 3 days, and a clock that I had never touched.
Mm-hmm.
So I roll running down the hall, I turn this thing off, and how did this get on? And I thought somebody maybe had broke into the place. So I looked over the place, and nobody was in, the doors were still locked. I said, okay, I went back to bed, and I'm laying in there. And it's driving me nuts. How did that clock get on?
Mm-hmm.
So I start hearing noise. Sounds like footsteps.
Footsteps?
Yeah, like somebody's walking in the living room or walking through a bedroom. I'm thinking, there is somebody in this place.
So now, but still, even at that point, a logical mind would say somebody's breaking in.
Yeah.
Or had you already gone past that, you knew nobody was in? I mean, where was your head at that
point? Well, at this point, I knew I had looked over and I didn't see anybody, but not really one to assume, oh, it must be a ghost. The logical explanation to me is there's got to be somebody in here and I just didn't see him.
Sure.
So I'm listening and I'm still hearing every once in a while what sounds like people walking around. And for about 10, 15 minutes of listening to this, from laying in my bed, I could see a little nightlight plugged in down the hall. And it's one of those really cheap nightlights that just plug right into the wall, and there's a little bulb on it that lights up orange.
Yes. It
must be like a half a candle power, and they've been around since like 1920.
I know the ones.
Okay. So there's one out there. And all of a sudden, it just goes off like the flash bulb on a camera. It just goes off that bright.
Uh-huh.
It gets dark. I'm thinking, what is that? And I figure, okay, bulb must have just been burning out. That was its last hurrah.
Right.
That's why it's dark now.
Uh-huh.
But I still can't figure out why every once in a while I'm hearing footsteps. And then there's a sliding door next to the bed and leading out to the pool. And I hear this next to the sliding door. And the porch isn't closed. So I know. Couldn't have been anybody in there. So I'm like, what the?
Well, that would have been enough for me right there. That would have been my limit.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, so I hear a swish, and I had no idea what that was. I'm thinking middle of the night, maybe I'm hearing stuff. I don't know. Well, I don't know. Another 10, 15 minutes goes by, and it sounds like somebody, you know what it sounds like when you put a glass of water down on a counter?
Sure.
Okay, got that sound from a bathroom down the hall.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, what? And this is now reassuring to me that somebody is in the house. Somebody has broken in, I'm convinced. I still hear more footsteps every once in a while.
Uh-huh.
I don't know, another 15, 20 minutes go by. The nightlight in the hall flashes up real bright again. There went my theory of the bulb that just burned out.
Oh, you mean, also, oh my, back to life.
Yeah, came again, real bright. And then it just died. So I'm laying there in bed, trying to justify all this. I look at the clock, and suddenly it's almost 4 a.m. No, it's past, I don't know, 4 o'clock, 4:05. And I'm like, yeah, you've been, I'm talking to myself now, you know. Schwab, you've been awake an hour in the middle of the night, listening to the noises, and for whatever reason, being scared. Nobody's in here. The doors are locked. Shut up and go to sleep. You got to be up early.
Sure.
So I roll over, shut my eyes, and then had them shut for about 15 seconds, and I will go to my grave swearing the footsteps I heard in the hallway, heard somebody walk into the bedroom and walk right up to the bed so close to it that I could have, like, reached out and grabbed them. Open my eyes, there's nobody there. Throw on the light, grab an iron, because it was the only thing I could find in the bedroom that resembled a weapon.
Uh-huh.
Did a once-over of the place, couldn't find a soul. At that point, I didn't know what to do, so I just figured I got to get out of here. I got dressed, threw on my contact lenses, and and basically ducked out the back door, got in the car, and left.
Uh-huh. And went, what, to a motel or something?
No, I went to a payphone.
Payphone.
I got about 4:10, 4:15, but the time I got out of there, excuse me. Call my wife. I woke her up. Just like, hon, just bear with me for a minute. Tell me if I'm crazy. So I relayed everything to her, and she's like, no, I would have got out of there a lot sooner than you did.
Yeah, me too.
So I don't know what I did. Went and got a cup of coffee, called a couple people, called my minister.
Your minister?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. What
a friend of the family.
And what did he say?
He said, I relayed everything to him. He's like, yep, sounds like you might have something in there. And as a Christian, you believe that they can't hurt you. They can scare you, but they can't harm you.
Uh-huh.
So he told me that, and I had already knew that anyway. He basically reassured me. So that got me enough gumption to at least go back in around 7 o'clock. And
you went back.
Well, I had to go to work.
Oh, I see.
And I had to throw on a change of clothes, and my work bag was still there. So I went in for about 5 minutes and changed and got out of there. Nothing happened when I was back. One of the other phone calls I made was to my boss.
I was going to say.
My program director.
Who is your program director?
Ray Davis.
Ray Davis. So you called Ray.
I called Ray at home, and I'm like, Ray, you know what I mean, to be a pretty sane guy. He's like, yeah. So I told him everything, and he couldn't believe it. He believed me, but he was laughing, but he believed me. He's like, you got to understand, this does sound kind of funny back from our end. I'm like, yeah, I can imagine. So he knows this girl who is a paranormal expert who apparently has been on our station before and done stuff with our station before. Her name was Marianne. So he called Marianne, and he said, she can find out, just being on the phone with you, whether or not they're in there, or if you're just crazy. I'm like, all right, great. Hopefully she'll tell me I'm crazy and I can just go on with life. And so he arranges it that at 3:10 that afternoon on our afternoon drive show, I'll be on with Mike, who was our show host, and Marianne will be on the phone too. So 3:10 rolls around. I go back to the house, not knowing what to expect. Everything was cool. I walked in, I didn't have anything throwing stuff at me, I guess.
Yeah.
So I get on the phone, I recount my story to Mike and everyone who's listening. He thinks I'm half nuts, and then she starts to tell me what's up. She's like, well, I'll tell you this, where's the room with the twin beds? I'm like, I never told you I had twin beds. So
did you tell anybody?
No.
No, okay.
No, so she's like, well, one is in there. It's a female. She's around 55. I'm like, oh, all right, great. No, that was a male. I'm sorry. That was 55. She said, I see like some kind of a split dresser with a mirror or something. I'm like, that's in the master bedroom. She's like, well, that's where the other one is. That's a female around the same age. I'm like, okay. And at this point, I'm a little, I'm like officially freaked out.
And this is all on the air.
This
on
is on the air, which, by the way, was about the only thing keeping me sane through this afternoon. So she tells me then that there's something on the sink like a bag. I said, yeah. First I said no, and then I saw the bag, and she said, all right, she has moved. She is now there. And is there something like a bookshelf or maybe an entertainment center somewhere in their room? And there was an entertainment center with a TV in it.
Mm.
That was behind me. And she's like, okay, he's moved. He's now there. Which would put them bookending me on each side of me by about 5 feet.
So she's following them foot for foot around the house.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
So I'm like, look to my left, look to my right. I'm like, so there's one on each side of me. She said, yes. And apparently that made them aware that I was aware of them, because then the swishing sound, which she had told me earlier in the conversation, the swishing sound that I heard the night before was them moving. So the swishing sound then all of a sudden picked up. Just...
While you were on the air?
While I'm on the air. Now, I had no windows open, no air conditioning on, no doors open. And for anyone that said, and I was trying to say at first, that's just a breeze. I'm still trying to convince myself that nothing was going on, but breezes don't turn corners. You know, breezes don't go straight right. And hook a right.
No, that's right.
So it was picking up. Just... They're flying all over the place.
Oh, my God. So...
So I'm on the air with them, and I'm Mike would be talking to Mary Ann, and so what are they going to do? Are they going to come after one? And I would occasionally be like, hey, they're moving again. Here's what's going on. And I was on with Mike for about an hour.
A full hour of this?
A full hour of this stuff.
Right.
I was on hold and ready to hang up during our 4 o'clock newscast, which would have been around the clock, top of the hour, been an hour. And all of a sudden, I hear a water faucet in the bathroom down the hall just, like, start to run a little bit of water.
Nobody else is in the house?
Nobody else is in the house. And then I start hearing all this splashing.
Splashing.
Now, I'm trying to think what the heck that is. And then it hits me. The pool is behind me.
Uh-huh.
And nobody was in the pool. The pool was enclosed. Nobody could have got into it. I didn't have a neighbor nearby with kids in a pool. All this splashing and stuff going on, I'm like, great. They're swimming.
Yeah, they're swimming.
Wonderful. So I packed up. They told me they were sending me what are called smudge sticks, which I guess is like an incense that bothers the ghosts.
Oh, to hell with that. Get out of the house.
Well, I did for now. For then, I got out. They were told me, my boss told me they had overnighted them to me. So I hung up. Left, spent the night in a hotel.
No, wait a minute. Your boss thought you were supposed to take... He was ordering you to take the smudge sticks and go back to the house?
The next day.
So, I don't think so.
Well, I ended up doing it.
Really well?
I'm on the air with them. My wife hears me. She can tell I'm freaked out. She flies down. Spends the night with me in the hotel. Come back the next day with our smudge sticks. We, like, light these things up. We're going through the house. And as we're putting them in each room... We can feel the, like, the ghost or whatever
taking
blow
off.
Past me,
blow
out of the room.
Oh, my God. Holy mackerel. So, bottom line, you rid the house of them with the smudge sticks?
You know what? I guess it, like, knocks them out because we put them in every room. And then I called Mary Ann back, the paranormal expert, and I said, all right, so what's going on? She's like, well, one's in the bedroom, and it's... pretty well knocked out. That's her, and the guy's out in the garage, and he's not doing so well either. I'm like, all right, great. So they were like hammered or drunk, stoned, whatever you want to call them. I don't know.
Probably pissed off.
Well, yeah, man, you know what? Enjoy. So I took that opportunity to pack up all my stuff, got out of there, and haven't been back since. And I don't plan on it.
When you told your boss you weren't going back, I mean, that's it. I'm out of there.
Well, yeah, at first he... At first, we didn't know, because fortunately, the folks at the country club place were nice enough to believe us, and they just got us a new house. But at first, we didn't know if that was going to be the case.
So you had to tell them this whole story and get them to believe you.
Yeah, and fortunately, they believed us, and then we sent them a cassette of the hour. I was on with Mike and the paranormal girl, and that might have helped convince them anyway. So they got us a new house, but it was up for a couple days. We didn't know what we were going to do. I spent two nights in a hotel, and you know, my boss was like, well, you just might have to keep using these smudge sticks every 2-3 days or have somebody come in and bless the house. I'm like, no, I am not staying there.
Enough is enough, right?
Well, yeah. They also paged me. That was the other thing. When I got into the house, when I checked in that Thursday, 5 minutes after I had been there, my pager went off. 8888 And I didn't think anything of it. I figured somebody paged me a toll-free number, and I never got the rest of it. I called my boss, called a couple friends. Nobody had paged me, and I just disregarded it and moved on. After I hung up with Mike that day on the afternoon show, when I had Marianne had said they're here, and I had heard all the swishing, I hung up, went into the bedroom to pack up an overnight bag, and I got paged again, 8888. And I had talked to her later on. I said, can they do anything with a pager? She said, yeah, they can use... You know, they can use the phone. It's easy for them to use the 5 and the 8 button.
Oh,
so I'm like, so is
well, Mark, as somebody who is very level-headed, because you still are, and never believed in this kind of stuff, how do you feel now?
Oh, I figure there's answers to it all, and I don't know them all. And you know what? I've been alive on this earth 26 and a half years. I've had to deal with it once. Honestly, I don't care enough to try to find out all the answers. I got out of the house. Just let me get back to doing my job of watching baseball, and I'll be a happy guy.
All right. Brother, thank you very much for being here. Thank WTAM for allowing you to be here and telling your story. Good night, my friend.
Night, Art.
Good night. There you have it, folks. A non-believer. Well, he was. We'll be back.
It'd be me all right, and it certainly is a weird night. Nights are strange. I can't tell you what's different, but it certainly isn't the same as the daytime, is it? Good morning. Covering what has happened in Seattle, and in a moment, covering something that happened in Florida that connects directly to the Ghost to Ghost show that we're going to be doing tonight. So stay right where you are. My affiliate in Cleveland, Ohio, is one of the nation's great old gigantic clear channel radio stations, WTAM 1100 in Cleveland. For that same radio station, there is a reporter. Mark Schwab is his name. That's S-C-H-W-A-B. He's a sports news and sports reporter. And I began getting faxes, emails and faxes, a couple of weeks ago, maybe not that long ago, and as we were contemplating the Ghost to Ghost program, people would write and say, did you know that there was a major incident with a sports reporter for WTAM? And I kept getting them. And finally, of course, I decided to call WTAM in Cleveland and find out what was going on. And here's the guy who can tell us, Mark Schwab. Mark, welcome.
Top of the very early morning to you, Art, from
and
Central Florida.
To you as well. WTAM had sent you to Florida to do what?
Cover the Indians. Spring training. We're the flagship home of the tribe, and the Indians happen to be my beat. So when spring training rolls around, I pack up, head to Winter Haven, Florida, where they practice and get ready for the season, and stay there until the season starts.
Oh, well, so then you're the guy who kind of looks them over and gives Cleveland a preview of what their team might or might not do.
Exactly.
Uh-huh. How do they look, by the way?
On paper, they're excellent.
On paper, they're excellent.
On paper, they're excellent. They lost some guys. They brought some new guys in, and now, you know, it's whether or not the new faces blend with the old, the team chemistry clicks, and a few questions in the pitching staff get ironed out. But there's so many question marks that a few of the ifs are bound to pan out, so they should be all right this year.
All right. So how long, then? You stay there a total of how long?
I flew in on February 15th. I go home March 30th.
What did you do? Rent an apartment or stay in a hotel or what?
They went to a country club and rented one big house for all of us to stay in, because I'm down here, and then eventually our show hosts will trickle in.
Oh.
And they'll do shows from down here, so there'll be more than one of us here eventually. There'll be 2, 3, 4, 5 of us. So they just rented one big house and put us all in there.
One big house?
One big house.
And therein lies, I guess,
the issue.
Actually, I've got to tell you, now, my emails could have been wrong, but they said that you got so scared, so freaked out over whatever it was that was happening that you refused to stay in the house.
Yeah, it got to the point I left one morning at 4:15 in the morning after hearing about an hour's worth of stuff. And, it was kind of funny because I'm so skeptical and hard-headed about this kind of stuff. I'm I still don't believe in it, I guess. I don't know. It was, I'm usually the first person to tell someone they're an idiot or on crack when they say their house is haunted. So it took a bit for me to, finally get out of there.
Well, it's a long trip from they've got to be on crack to I'm out of here.
Yeah.
So what the heck happened?
All right, I flew in on a Thursday, which was the 15th. The main event, I guess you could say, it really started to hit the fan on Sunday night. But for the 4 days prior, I just noticed it was a noisy house. You know, some houses are noisy. Appliances are loud, or you'll hear creaks or whatever, and those are just house noises.
Yeah, I've been in houses with bad pipes, and they're creepy. They make creepy sounds.
Yeah. It was weird, though, because I'd be in the living room on the couch, and it would sound like somebody was walking in the bedroom down the hall.
Uh-huh.
It sounded like there would be a second person in there. But I just wrote it off as noise and figured, you know, whatever. You're the only one here. Just don't worry about it.
And you knew you weren't doing lines of crack or whatever.
Yeah, you know, and I was, yeah, I've never touched a drug in my life, and I barely drink, so.
All right, so.
So let's go through 4 days of that, and then Sunday night, technically Monday morning, 3:04 a.m., an alarm clock goes off. And I thought it was mine at first because I had to get up at 7, looked up, wasn't 7 o'clock, and it wasn't my alarm. It was one in a bedroom down the hall, a room that I hadn't been in 3 days, and a clock that I had never touched.
Mm-hmm.
So I roll running down the hall, I turn this thing off, and how did this get on? And I thought somebody maybe had broke into the place. So I looked over the place, and nobody was in, the doors were still locked. I said, okay, I went back to bed, and I'm laying in there. And it's driving me nuts. How did that clock get on?
Mm-hmm.
So I start hearing noise. Sounds like footsteps.
Footsteps?
Yeah, like somebody's walking in the living room or walking through a bedroom. I'm thinking, there is somebody in this place.
So now, but still, even at that point, a logical mind would say somebody's breaking in.
Yeah.
Or had you already gone past that, you knew nobody was in. I mean, where was your head at that
point? Well, at this point, I knew I had looked over and I didn't see anybody. But not really one to assume, it must be a ghost. The logical explanation to me is there's got to be somebody in here and I just didn't see him.
Sure.
So I'm listening and I'm still hearing every once in a while what sounds like people walking around. And for about 10, 15 minutes of listening to this, from laying in my bed, I could see a little nightlight plugged in down the hall. And it's one of those really cheap nightlights that you just plug right into the wall, and there's a little bulb on it that lights up orange.
Yes.
It must be like a half a candle power, and they've
sure.
been around since like 1920.
I know the ones.
Okay. So there's one out there. And all of a sudden, it just goes off like the flash bulb on a camera. It just goes off that bright.
Uh-huh.
And gets dark. I'm thinking, what is that? And I figure, okay, bulb must have just been burning out. That was its last hurrah.
Right.
That's why it's dark now.
Uh-huh.
But I still can't figure out why every once in a while I'm hearing footsteps. And then there's a sliding door next to the bed and leading out to the pool. And I hear this next to the sliding door. And the porch isn't closed. So I knew couldn't have been anybody in there.
Uh-huh.
So I'm like, what the?
Yeah, that would have been enough for me right there. That would have been my limit.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, so I hear a swish, and I had no idea what that was. I'm thinking middle of the night, maybe I'm hearing stuff. I don't know. Well, I don't know. Another 10, 15 minutes goes by, and it sounds like somebody, you know what it sounds like when you put a glass of water down on a counter?
Sure.
Okay, got that sound from a bathroom down the hall.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, what? And this is now reassuring to me that somebody is in the house. Somebody has broken in, I'm convinced. And I still hear more footsteps every once in a while.
Uh-huh.
Well, another 15, 20 minutes go by. The nightlight in the hall flashes up real bright again. There went my theory of the bulb that just burned out.
Oh, you mean, back to life.
Yeah, came again real, real bright. And then it just died. So I'm laying there in bed, trying to justify all this. I look at the clock, and suddenly it's almost 4 a.m. No, it's past 4 o'clock, 4:05. And I'm like, you've been, I'm talking to myself now, you know. Schwab, you've been awake an hour in the middle of the night, listening to the noises, and for whatever reason being scared. Nobody's in here, the doors are locked, shut up and go to sleep, you gotta be up early.
Sure.
So I roll over, shut my eyes, and then had them shut for about 15 seconds, and I will go to my grave, swearing the footsteps I heard in the hallway, heard somebody walk into the bedroom and walk right up to the bed so close to it that I could have, like, reached out and grabbed them. Open my eyes, there's nobody there. Throw on the light, grab an iron, because it was the only thing I could find in the bedroom that resembled a weapon.
Uh-huh.
Did a once-over of the place, couldn't find a soul. At that point, I didn't know what to do, so I just figured I got to get out of here. I got dressed, threw on my contact lenses, and, like, and basically ducked out the back door, got in the car, and left.
Uh-huh. And went, what, to a motel or something?
No, I went to a payphone.
Payphone.
I got about 4:10, 4:15, but the time I got out of there, excuse me, called my wife. I woke her up, just like, hon, just bear with me for a minute. Tell me if I'm crazy. So I relayed everything to her, and she's like, no, I would have got out of there a lot sooner than you did.
Yeah, me too.
So I don't know what I did. Went and got a cup of coffee, called a couple people, called my minister.
Your minister?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
He's a friend of the family.
And what did he say?
He said, I relayed everything to him. He's like, yep, sounds like you might have something in there. And as a Christian, you believe that they can't hurt you. They can scare you, but they can't harm you.
Uh-huh.
So he told me that, and I had already knew that anyway. He basically reassured me. So that got me enough gumption to at least go back in around 7 o'clock. And
you went back?
Well, I had to go to work.
Oh, I see.
And I had to throw on a change of clothes, and my work bag was still there. So I went in for about 5 minutes and changed and got out of there. Nothing happened when I was back. One of the other phone calls I made was to my boss.
I was going to say.
My program director.
Your program, who is your program director?
Ray Davis.
Ray Davis. So you called Ray.
I called Ray at home, and I'm like, Ray, you know what I mean, to be a pretty sane guy. He's like, yeah. So I told him everything, and he couldn't believe it. He believed me, but he was laughing, but he believed me. He's like, you got to understand, this does sound kind of funny back from our end. I'm like, yeah, I can imagine it. So he knows this girl who is a paranormal expert who apparently has been on our station before and done stuff with our station before. Her name was Marianne. So he called Marianne, and he said, she can find out just being on the phone with you whether or not they're in there, or if you're just crazy. I'm like, all right, great. Hopefully she'll tell me I'm crazy and I can just go on with life. And so he arranges it that at 3:10 that afternoon on our afternoon drive show, I'll be on with Mike, who was our show host, and Marianne will be on the phone too. So 3:10 rolls around. I go back to the house, not knowing what to expect. Everything was cool. I walked in, I didn't have anything throwing stuff at me, I guess.
Yeah.
So I get on the phone, I recount my story to Mike and everyone who's listening. He thinks I'm half nuts. And then she starts to tell me what's up. She's like, well, I'll tell you this, where's the room with the twin beds? I'm like, I never told you I had twin beds. So.
Did you tell anybody?
No.
No, okay.
No, so she's like, well, one is in there. It's a female. She's around 55. I'm like, oh, all right, great. No, that was a male. I'm sorry. That was 55. She said, I see, like, some kind of a split dresser with a mirror or something. I'm like, that's in the master bedroom. She's like, well, that's where the other one is. That's a female around the same age. I'm like, okay. At this point, I'm a little, I'm like, officially freaked out.
And this is all on the air.
This
on
is
WTA.
On the air, which, by the way, was about the only thing keeping me sane through this afternoon. So, she tells me then, is there something on the sink, like a bag? I said, yeah. First I said no, and then I saw the bag, and she said, all right, she has moved. She is now there. And is there something like a bookshelf or maybe an entertainment center somewhere in the room? And there was an entertainment center with a TV in it that was behind me. And she's like, okay, he's moved. He's now there, which would put them bookending me on each side of me by about 5 feet.
So she's following them foot for foot around the house?
Yeah.
Oh, my.
So, I'm like, look to my left, look to my right. I'm like, so there's one on each side of me. She said, yes. Apparently that made them aware that I was aware of them, because then the swishing sound, which she had told me earlier in the conversation, the swishing sound that I heard the night before was them moving. So the swishing sound, and then all of a sudden picked up. Just...
While you were on the air?
While I'm on the air. Now, I had no windows open, no air conditioning on, no doors open. And for anyone that says, and I was trying to say at first, that's just a breeze. Still trying to convince myself that nothing was going on, but breezes don't turn corners. You know, breezes don't go straight and hook a right.
No, that's right.
So it was picking up. Just... They're flying all over the place.
Oh, my God. So...
So I'm on the air with them, and I'm kind of, and Mike would be talking to Mary Ancy, and so what are they going to do? Are they going to come after one? And I would occasionally be like, hey, they're moving again. Here's what's going on. And I was on with Mike for about an hour.
A full hour of this.
A full hour of this stuff.
Right.
I was on hold and ready to hang up during our 4 o'clock newscast, which would have been around the clock, top of the hour, been an hour. And all of a sudden, I hear a water faucet in the bathroom down the hall just, like, start to run a little bit of water.
Nobody else is in the house?
Nobody else is in the house. And then I start hearing all this splashing.
Splashing.
Now, I'm trying to think what the heck that is. And then it hits me. The pool is behind me.
Uh-huh.
And nobody was in the pool. The pool was enclosed. Nobody could have got into it. I didn't have a neighbor nearby with kids in a pool. All this splashing and stuff going, I'm like, great. They're swimming.
Yeah, they're swimming.
Wonderful. So I packed up. They told me they were sending me what are called smudge sticks, which I guess is like an incense that bothers the ghosts.
Oh,
like,
to hell with that. Get out of the house.
I did for now. Then I got out. They were told me, my boss told me they had overnighted them to me. So I hung up. Left, spent the night in a hotel.
Now, wait a minute. Your boss thought you were supposed to take... He was ordering you to take the smudge sticks and go back to the house?
The next day.
So, I don't think so.
Well, I ended up doing it.
Very right, well.
I'm on the air with them. My wife hears me. She can tell I'm freaked out. She flies down. Spends the night with me in the hotel. Come back the next day with our smudge sticks. We, like, light these things up. We're going through the house. And as we're putting them in each room... You can feel the, like, the ghost or whatever.
Taken
blow
off.
Past me. Blow. Out of the room.
Oh, my God. Holy mackerel. So, bottom line, you rid the house of them with the smudge sticks?
You know what? I guess it, like, knocks them out because we put them in every room. And then I called Marianne back, the paranormal expert, and I said, all right, so what's going on? She's like, well, one's in the bedroom, and it's... pretty well knocked out. That's her, and the guy's out in the garage, and he's not doing so well either. I'm like, all right, great. So they were, like, hammered or drunk, stoned, whatever you want to call them. I don't know.
Probably pissed off.
Well, yeah, and you know what? Enjoy. So I took that opportunity to pack up all my stuff, got out of there, and haven't been back since. Plan on it.
When you told your boss you weren't going back, I mean, that's it. I'm out of there.
Well, you know, at first he... At first, we didn't know, because fortunately, the folks at the country club place were nice enough to believe us, and they just got us a new house. But at first, we didn't know if that was going to be the case.
So you had to tell them this whole story and get them to believe you.
Yeah, and they believed us, and then we sent them a cassette of the hour. I was on with Mike and the paranormal girl, and that might have helped convince them anyway. So they got us a new house, but it was up for a couple of days. We didn't know what we were going to do. I spent two nights in a hotel, and you know, my boss is like, well, you just might have to keep using these smudge sticks every 2-3 days. We'll have somebody come in and bless the house. I'm like, no, I am not staying there.
Enough is enough, right?
Well, yeah. They also paged me. That was the other thing. When I got into the house, when I checked in that Thursday, 5 minutes after I had been there, my pager went off. 8888.
Oh.
And I didn't think anything of it. I figured somebody paged me a toll-free number, and I never got the rest of it. I called my boss, called a couple friends. Nobody had paged me, and I just disregarded it and moved on. After I hung up with Mike that day on the afternoon show, when Marianne had said they're here, and I had heard all the swishing, I hung up, went into the bedroom to pack up an overnight bag, and I got paged again, 8888. And I had talked to her later on. I said, can they do anything with your pager? She said, yeah, they can use, you know, they can use the phone. It's easy for them to use the 5 and the 8 button.
Oh, man.
So I'm like, so is
Well, Mark, as somebody who is very level-headed, because you still are, and never believed in this kind of stuff, how do you feel now?
Oh, I figure there's answers to it all, and I don't know them all. And you know what? I've been alive on this earth 26 and a half years. I've had to deal with it once. Honestly, I don't care enough to try to find out all the answers. I got out of the house. Just let me get back to doing my job of watching baseball, and I'll be a happy guy.
All right. Brother, thank you very much for being here. Thank WTAM for allowing you to be here and telling your story. Good night, my friend.
Night, Art.
Good night. There you have it, folks. A non-believer. Well, he was. We'll be back. All right. That certainly is appropriate for tonight, isn't it? Let me first tell you that on my website, we have about 3 pages of brand new ghost photographs for tonight's program. You just heard the reporter in the last half hour from WTAM in Cleveland, who was a complete non-believer in this sort of thing, and it got to the point where the house he was provided down in Florida no longer was livable. Obviously, it was haunted. And non-believer that he is, he finally had had enough, and he left, and he will not go back to that house, and I don't blame him. When we do Ghost to Ghost, we do serious and real ghost stories. That's why it's frightening. These aren't made up. It's not baloney. It's real. So I warn you, if you frighten easily, turn the radio off. A lot of what you're going to hear tonight is going to be frightening. Most of what you're going to hear tonight comes from all of you. Your real stories. That's exactly what makes them so frightening. I don't laugh at people who have these experiences. I don't laugh at all. Mark Schwab, I'm sure, got chuckled at by his friends at WTAM. But I can assure you, if it happens to you, the smile gets wiped off your face very quickly indeed. Are ghosts captured on film? Yes, they are. On digital cameras? Yes, they are. And if you'll go to my website right now, let me see, and you go to program and tonight's guest info, you will see Ghost to Ghost AM with Art Bell, and then below it, you'll see recent ghost photos, 3 pages. Take a look at some of those. There's a fire photograph in there that is evil from start to finish. There's a photograph that'll just scare the you-know-what out of you. It's obviously not just the random flicker of a flame caught on film, but something truly evil caught on film. And that's one of many up there, but it's completely freaky. That's all I can tell you. Completely freaky. All right. Now, I've got somebody on the phone that sent me a fax earlier today that freaked me out because it has to do with a man that I worked with. And some of you may recall that I did a guest appearance on Dark Skies, NBC's Dark Skies. Remember that? And I played one of the Majestic 12 board members, and the actor that I was with, was the star of the show, was J.T. Walsh, who passed away, I think now about 3 years ago. J.T. was a great guy, a great actor, and a man who helped me. I hate TV. Man, I hate television. I ward off TV like some people ward off evil. I just don't like it. I turn it down right and left. But working with J.T. was really fun because he was so relaxed and so natural and so intense with regard to what he was doing. And he just relaxed me, and we had a blast doing Dark Skies, an absolute blast. Now, why have I said all of this? Well, there's a reason. It's the man who sent me the facts. His name is Todd. Todd, welcome to the program.
Hi, Art.
Hi there. I know that you're coming on here tentatively and that you weren't even sure you wanted to do this, right?
Yeah, that's true, Art. The only reason I'm coming on tentatively, I guess, is because I guess I'm not worried about myself. I just wanted to think and respect the family of JT, and his son is a good friend of mine. So it's an intimate thing. So I was a little bit tentative, but I thought, you know, JT was a big fan of yours and of your show and of this type of subject.
Apparently so. Now, I didn't really know that. I mean, I knew the show that JT was doing, but you put some details in the facts that surprised me. I had no idea JT was apparently into the unusual, but he was, wasn't he? Now you were in JT's house. Why were you in his house?
Well, his son, as I mentioned, is a good friend of mine. And about 2 years after JT passed, myself and two other friends moved into the house with his son.
I met his son at the, or I should say his son met me at the airport, believe it or not.
Right.
JT sent his son down to the airport when I came to do that episode of Dark Skies, so I met his son. Very nice fellow.
Yeah, he actually had mentioned that to me once before.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
All right, so you moved into the house with his son and then one other?
Actually, two other people.
Two others, all right.
And we all from time to time had a number of experiences, but I think that I probably, for some reason, had the most or kind of absorbed the brunt of the experiences. As a matter of fact, as that last guest that you just had on there, I just wanted to say that those types of stories in the house were were a common type occurrence.
What kind of, like what?
Well, first of all, I want to say that I always got the sense that this spirit in the house was not a mean spirit. As a matter of fact, it was quite friendly, and just the sense that I got, and I got the sense that this spirit actually kind of liked us being there and living in the house. But, here's one.
Okay, just before you go on, you wrote, I also want to point out the study, which I guess you're going to talk about, was filled with books paralleling the topics of your show, including books on ghosts and communicating from the other side. This is in J.T. Walsh's house, right?
That's correct.
Okay. So some I still have in my possession to this day. You say including a copy of the script from the episode that I was in with him?
Dark Skies, yeah.
You're kidding.
No. As a matter of fact, Art, I learned of J.T.'s death from your show. I was driving in my car late that night, and I was friends with John, although I didn't know JT in life. I was friends with John. I was riding home late at night listening to your show, and I learned of JT's death from your program, from your voice.
So JT obviously was was considering all of this, whether there was life after death, and if there was, could one communicate from the other side? He was obviously considering all this.
Most definitely. In my opinion.
So then, at one point in here, you say you were finally living in a full-blown haunted house.
Yep.
Is that accurate?
That's accurate, yes.
Okay, when you say full-blown haunted house, what do you mean?
Well, just like that gentleman was talking about earlier, I'm talking about, you know, common thing was hearing footsteps a lot, flickering of lights on and off, doors that would lock. We never, like, for example, the front door would lock a lot, but none of us, we were all bachelors, it was just kind of foolish, but none of us had a key to the front door, and you could only lock it from the inside. And there was a lot of times that I stayed alone in the house, and I would leave to go do this or do that, and I couldn't have possibly locked the front door myself, because then I wouldn't have been able to leave the house, because I could only lock it from the inside without a key. I would come home a lot and the front door would be locked and I would be the only person that would be there. Every now and then you would hear like a distant kind of a whispering voice over your shoulder, and you kind of look to see, and
really?
A lot of times there were, you really got an intense feeling of being watched, and particularly in different parts of the house. As a matter of fact, later on, as the experience began to escalate, we went through two different sets of cleaning ladies because they refused to clean in the house anymore because of the experiences that they were having.
You're kidding.
No.
Obviously you're not.
No, I'm not.
Is it your view that it was JT? Do you have any?
You know what? I'm not a medium, and I'm not the expert at all. Like the woman, you know, who was on the previous interview. But if it wasn't him, I got the sense that it was. If it wasn't him, then it could have been another spirit that was maybe posing as him. His ashes were in the house. You know, there were a lot of different things that pointed in that direction. I would work in his study a lot in different times. And I'm an aspiring filmmaker myself, and I'd be breaking down the script and coming up with creative choices. And in a weird, backhanded kind of a way, I would get this sense of inspiration, so to speak, that mm-hmm. when I would reach a sticking point. And as these different things began to escalate, oh, and by the way, there was a front gate, electric gate, that would open and close on its own when you had to know which telephone line and what the code was for that. I mean, these things went on and on and on all the time. There were times when my girlfriend and I, who I was dating at the time, it became so obvious that we would literally leave the house for the night. You know, it was a classic haunting.
What do you mean by a normal glass of wine would turn into a bottle or even two? What do you mean?
Oh, that was where I was kind of leading. Eventually, my personality when I was in the house kind of began to change.
Oh?
This is kind of more difficult to talk about than I thought. I would start picking up books that I wouldn't normally pick up, watching movies I wouldn't normally watch. I started drinking a lot more in the house than I normally would. And I know JT in his past had that habit. And just lots of different things. It was almost as if I was kind of taking on his personality. And I don't know if this means anything. I'm not an expert by any means. But it was almost like there was residual life or energy from him, some kind of in the furniture and the walls and the artwork and the books and the everything, that almost kind of rubbed off on you. I don't know if that makes any sense. But
sure,
that was
sure
kind
it does.
Of, that was kind of how it felt. And one night in particular, I
wonder if you're kind of an empath of some sort. That would be somebody who is able to feel what others are feeling. That imprint is on them, and they essentially start to become that and start to feel the pain, if not more, from that person or entity in this case.
I think that that's probably true. At any rate, my personality when I was in the house was kind of start to change, and this night in particular was getting close toward the sale of the house, and which was kind of another factor. Things really kind of started to escalate, particularly with my kind of empathic experience, as you put it. And I just was going to start off by having a glass of wine, and a glass of wine led to, you know, those big, huge bottles of wine that are almost as big as two or three.
Yes.
I ended up drinking that whole thing by myself in the hot tub that night and breaking glass all over the house.
Now, there are people who are going to say doing that could cause delusions.
Well, that's probably true. And I would admit that, you know. But it may be just coincidence. It may have just been an unconscious thing. But the next morning, the realtor was coming to show the house, which was obviously wasn't a very good thing. But I always kind of got the sense that whatever the spirit was didn't want us to leave and didn't want any new people to come in.
Now, that would make sense, wouldn't it?
It did kind of at the time, yeah.
Since his son was there.
That's correct.
That would make all the sense in the world. And by the way, what did his son say about, did you talk with him about this?
We did. And there were, you know, there were other, the other guys in the house were having pretty intense experiences as well. He had mentioned that there were other friends and family, close friends and family that he had that had noticed other things, and he didn't deny the fact, but he didn't quite have the intense experiences, I don't think, that we had. So I don't know if in a weird kind of a way it kind of comforted him, or I can't really speak for him, but he was aware of it, but I just don't think to the extent, you know, that we were.
Well, you know, J.T. Walsh was a very, very strong personality.
Mm-hmm.
So it would not surprise me that in death, if it were possible, and if, you know, we don't know half of what we know about the other side and
right.
And ghosts. I'm still learning as everybody else is, but such a strong, dominant personality might indeed make an imprint of the sort that you described on somebody living in that house, particularly shortly after death. I really can see that happening.
It wouldn't surprise me at all. Although, you know, I will say for a large part of this, even though you kind of became aware, you know, of this was happening, you still are kind of in a sense of denial when things happen to you right in front of your face, you know? When the door locks right in front of your face or whatever it might be, you still are in a sense of denial about it, you know? And you don't live every moment while you're in a house like this where you're constantly thinking about it.
Sure.
Which kind of leads to my last story. This gets a little bit crazier.
That's okay. Go ahead.
Well, one of the things that would happen to me a lot, almost nightly, is my bed would shake. And there would be the fresh smell of smoke coming from the next room, which was the smoking room. And JT was a smoker and, you know, things like that, which I don't know if that's the case or not. But
your bed would shake?
My bed would shake almost nightly.
And how hard? I mean, I remember
until,
it
until,
in...
Until I woke up.
You remember The Exorcist?
Yeah, but it was never anything like that.
But enough to wake you up.
And usually it would until I woke up. And after a while, it would actually continue to shake after I was awake. And then after a while, again, it would just start shaking even before I fell asleep. And sometimes I couldn't tell if it was the bed that was shaking or if I knew it was shaking when I woke up and my heart was pounding so hard that it was my heart that was causing it. And yet sometimes I would feel like things in the mattress and like fingers and things like that. But I, you know, and I actually checked the mattress to see if there was mice in it and with my roommates and all kinds of stuff, and it was nothing. And it happened almost every night. But this one night in particular, I had fallen into a very deep sleep, and I hadn't slept very deeply lately because of the shaking bed stuff. And I reached this very deep place in sleep. With, you know, that point where you kind of start to reach almost a sleep paralysis?
Absolutely.
You know what I mean.
Of course.
Well, it was almost as if, and I don't know this for certain, but this is the impression that I got, that whatever this being or entity was waiting for me to reach that place. And the moment that I did, this, I could almost see that it was almost as if it was a shadow-type being, grabbed my right arm from the right side of my bed and started to pull me out of my body.
Pull you out of your body?
Pull me out of my own body, yes, that's correct. And it actually became a struggle for quite a while. It seemed like a long time, but I'm sure it was only just a few seconds. And I got the sense that this being was almost trying to get inside of me. I don't know if that's what it was, if it was just my imagination. I know it wasn't a dream. I know that for sure. And because as soon as I snapped back and kind of got right back into myself, I was awake right away. And that was by far the, even though things that happened physically in the house and things like that was by far the most dramatic experience.
All right. Well, you and I guess then have no way to know that it was J.T. Walsh, but it was his house shortly after he passed away. So that's some story, my friend. I really appreciate your telling us. I assume that house has now been sold.
Yes, it has.
And so you're not experiencing it anymore. What we can hope is that JT is at peace. I'm sure he is. He certainly deserves it.
I think so.
Thank you, my friend.
Have a good night.
Good night. I don't know. You decide. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM. Here on out tonight, the only thing we're doing is taking your ghost stories. And by that, I mean the real ones, the serious ones, not the little insignificant ones, but the serious ones. It's called Ghost to Ghost. And it's coming right up. It's nighttime. It's the time you do this sort of thing. This is Ghost to Ghost, and I turn the rest of the night over to all of you. Let us begin. On the first time caller line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hello?
Hello.
Art.
Yes.
How's it going?
Fine. Where are you?
I'm in Ellensburg.
Ellensburg, Washington.
Washington, where I felt the quake.
I was going to be the next question. Yeah, you did. All right.
I have several stories of the same type. I'll tell you one.
Just give me your best shot.
The most recent. I was asleep in my girlfriend's place, and I had a bad cough, and so during the night while I was coughing, I popped a lozenger in my mouth, and I felt four taps on my shoulder. I was asleep with the cough drop in my mouth.
You're not supposed to do that anyway.
Right.
With a cough drop in your mouth.
Right. Well, it was the only way I could sleep.
Right.
And they were such heavy taps that I woke my girlfriend and asked her, you know, did you have to hit me like that, you know?
Yep.
And it just made sense that I thought it was her telling me I had a cough drop in my mouth. But, it was such a serious physical touch that there could be no way that it was anything else than her.
Only it was.
No, it wasn't.
Yes, it was something other than her.
Oh, yes.
So?
I thought so. And those are my other stories.
So what do you think had hold of you?
I don't know. I don't know if it was ethereal or just paranormal or I don't know. I have no idea.
Maybe it's something that wanted you to go somewhere.
Or not go somewhere.
Or not or go not, somewhere.
By, not choking or whatever. Because it was in the very back of my throat when I woke up.
The lozenge?
Yes.
Well, there are some who would say it was a sleep thing, that nobody was tapping on you.
But
there's others who would say that it was maybe your guardian angel trying to save your life because you were about to choke to death on a throat lozenge.
Well, right. I know it seems silly, but I wouldn't have called in if I didn't think it was...
No, not silly. Not silly, sir. I appreciate your call. Thank you. Look, who's to say what the nature of the other side is? Who's to say that besides scaring the you-know-what out of you and being evil, and there certainly are evil entities, and by the way, again, go to my website. You want to see an evil entity, I'll show you one. We've got 3 pages of recent ghost photos, and there's one in there of a fire, and if that's not the most evil entity I've ever seen... Anyway, you judge for yourself at www.artbell.com. We've been saving the ghost photographs, the new ones. And we've got, I think, one of the best collections of ghosts on the web. But these recent ones, we've been saving for you. Keith has been sort of compiling them. And by the way, if you have a really good ghost photograph, you can send it to webmaster@artbell.com. That's webmaster@artbell.com. Even tonight, we'll get it on if it's a really, really good one. So, if you want to send one in, you're able to. Those who have done so in the last month or so are up there now, and a couple of them are really, really evil. Good morning on the wild card line. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, Mr. R. Bell, sir.
Yes.
My name is Josh. I'm in Seattle, Washington.
Oh, Seattle.
And the
ground,
first
ground zero.
I'm gonna ask is, did I feel the earthquake?
Yep, you
and
did,
yeah,
obviously.
Did, definitely.
Where were you?
I was actually walking. I live up on the hill and near White Center.
Right.
I was walking down the hill towards my bus stop, and I can see all of Seattle from there. And it was like kind of waving one way, and I was waving the other way. It was very disorientating.
Yes.
But yeah, so it was pretty weird. I actually do have a lot of better ghost stories than this one, but I want to tell this one because I actually caught a voice on tape.
Oh.
And I'd like to try to play that for you if I can.
Oh?
Yeah. This was over a year ago on the Halloween before last.
Yes.
It wasn't on that Halloween, but it was near it. I was working at a Halloween store, and
okay.
I had a friend, couple friends actually, they were telling me about weird stuff they saw around their apartment near Seattle, near SeaTac area.
Right.
And so I had heard on your show, actually, from the GIS.
Yes, the Ghost Investigators Society, yes.
About taking a tape recorder and trying that.
Yeah, and you did?
Yeah, I actually thought, maybe I'll try that. So I went and bought a brand new tape recorder from Radio Shack.
Right.
I have exactly the one I'm holding right now. And we went there, and the first question we asked was the one that I guess they suggested you should ask first, is anybody here kind of question.
Right.
And I'm sorry, I'm a little shaky right now.
No, that's all right. Just relax.
It's actually a pretty weird thing you're going to hear. If you can actually hear it, I'll try.
All right. Now, before you play it, tell me what it's going to say.
I have no idea. It does not sound like English. It sounds like Arabian or something.
All right.
It's
now, this
like
is let's qualify. A brand new tape recorder, and I hope a brand new tape.
Yes, a very brand new tape. Bought at Radio Shack as
okay.
well.
Okay. All right. Good enough. And so you asked if anybody was there, and
yeah.
what we're about to hear is what came back to you.
Yeah, I gotta let you know though. At first, when we first played it back, it just sounded kind of like a background whispering.
Yes.
But I also knew some people who had equipment to amplify it and take out the noise.
Yeah,
the
of course.
Noise.
Yep.
right? And so it sounds kind of wavy.
All right, that's right. Go ahead. Let's hear it.
Okay, but this, it's going to play it twice now, and this is exactly what we heard at the first question, and then we got no responses to any other questions after this.
All right.
Okay, here it goes.
Anybody in here?
Oh, man.
Okay, now did you hear that?
Oh, yes, I heard that
isn't that clearly amazing?
Yes, that's amazing. Oh, my God.
I'm not going to say for sure that this is totally genuine. It did go out of my hands for a couple minutes, but as far as I can tell, this is totally genuine.
So, yes, but before you had it analyzed for noise or to try to filter out the noise, which is a common thing to do in audio, you obviously heard something on the tape or you would not have given it to somebody to analyze.
Yeah, it just sounded kind of a whisper, kind of like kind of thing.
I've got you.
But it didn't answer anything like that after any of our other questions, like what is your name or anything like that. And I actually ended up living at this place a little while later because I needed some roommates. And I did actually witness some dishes flying off of a kitchen counter. When we were talking something about tarot cards, and I said something about they're not evil, and then these dishes went flying off the counter.
Do me a favor. Next time you're in the house, instead of asking, is there anybody here, try this question. Want to take a ride?
Oh, boy. Yeah. I just might.
Yeah, and good luck to you, and thank you very much for the story and the tape, too. Oh, my goodness. Now, the young man had a tape recorder and a blank tape and caught that. Now, you tell me, what was that?
Hmm?
What did we hear? I think we heard something from the other side. I think we heard something from an entity. Could we understand it? No. But the way it sounded, I'm not sure we would want to understand it. And I was kind of joking about asking anything further because if I got that kind of answer, I know the GIS folks do this kind of thing every day, but there's no way in the world that I would have proceeded past getting that answer. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Mark.
Yes.
How you doing? Bob from Philadelphia?
Yes, yes. Hi, Bob.
Okay. This is not a real long story, but it's a little complicated. My father's a dentist. He purchased a house to put his practice in back in the early 1940s. I was born in 41. As a child, I went to the house while it was being renovated.
Yes, sir.
And on the second floor, it's a three-story building. On the second floor, I felt really freezing cold, unusually cold, considering the rest of the building wasn't chilly in any way.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt that I was being watched. Well, my father said, no, you're just, being silly, so forth and so on. I didn't start to actually live in the building until the 1960s. And I was brought up to be one of these people who, did not, in fact, believe in any such thing as paranormal ghosts, any of that kind of thing.
I understand, yes.
And the deal was is that I purchased the house in 1970. I got married, and my wife and I lived in this house.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, my wife had said to me, you're talking to yourself. Why are you talking to yourself? And I said, that's not me. She said, well, why, isn't it you? Who's doing the talking if it's not you? There's only two of us here.
Right.
And I said, turn on the water. I happened to be in the bathroom at the time, which is a pretty good-sized room. I said, turn on the water in the sink. And she turned it on. I said, can you hear these voices better? Yeah. I said, turn on the tub. And then there was an electric space heater in there. Well, anyway, we turned everything on. And the louder the background noise became, the louder the voices became until she was able to recognize that it was a man and a woman arguing. So, at any rate, we had had problems with items that were missing or moved, like photos, magazines, tools. And I decided, since I was a commercial photographer, that what I would do is that I would try and see if there was any way to take a picture of whatever this was.
Oh.
I had purchased... You know what Heath Kit is, right, or was?
I built more Heath Kits than I can tell you.
Yes, well, I have a closet full of those myself.
That was an electronics manufacturer, folks, of old ham gear. And in fact, they did audio, even television, in Benton Harbor, Michigan, I believe, right?
That's right. That's exactly right. I had I built a little GR-104, portable TV, and I built radios and... Anyway, one of the things that I had done is I had purchased a bunch of kits that all had to do with security. There was, you know, ultrasonic detectors, you know, with transducers. There were all kinds. There was a base unit, a phone dialer, a whole bunch of this stuff.
Sure.
And when we turned it on for the first time, of course, my wife thought that it was, you know, something I had done that was wrong, but it wouldn't be on very long, especially at night, until, of course, the alarm went off. And it came down to the point where we shut the units off until we found out which one of the ones was going off the most. And I, of course, replaced it, and we had the same problem, and I did it two or three times. So I said, you know, I'll bet you that whatever it is that's been, you know, causing these noises and problems, again, second floor, three-floor building, it was right there on the second floor, the one that faced the length way down the hall, was the one that kept going off. So I said, you know, if we can detect it, we can photograph it, because we'll be able to use something like aeroectochrome or whatever, and, you know, strobe lights, you know.
Oh, no, that makes all the sense in the world. You've got a way of identifying roughly where it is, so...
Oh, the exact distance.
You can set up and catch it. Yeah, I've got you.
And, I mean, at one point, I mean, I had even bought a kit from Polaroid, you know, the Polaroid ultrasonics.
Oh, yes.
For distance measurement.
Yes.
And at any rate... I wanted to set up a test. I wanted to see, you know, if, you know, what time of day was best, and, you know, so I set this unit up, and I took it down. It was above the door, mounted to the door frame. I took it down, and I put it on top of one of the drawing table benches that, you know, that I had.
Right.
It's just about 3 foot tall.
Right.
Just to make sure, I put some plywood through the rungs, and I put some encyclopedia on top of that, and I put the wire down through the door into the rear room. The hall runs east and west. There was a rear steps coming off just behind where this was. It went north-south, and the front stairway, again, ran east and west and met the hall in the middle.
So anyway, you were setting up an entity photographic trap.
Yes, exactly what I was doing.
All right, and?
I didn't know whether I'd have to back like this, front like this, but I just wanted to know. So anyway, I waited till my wife had gone out. We had a couple of cats. I put them in the bedroom on the third floor and locked them in. Well, they were 5 minutes, and they were sound asleep. I turned the central processor on, which would detect a signal from the ultrasonic on the second floor, and I decided I better not move around the house, so I stayed in the third-floor kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't more than 5 minutes, then the alarm went off. Well, it was awfully loud, and so I thought, well, you know, I better, you know, the cats are going to, you know, die of this noise. I walked into the bedroom. I turned the central processor off, so the alarm stopped, and then that's when I heard the crash. There was crashing and banging, scared the life out of me. I thought maybe, you know, it wasn't picking up, in fact, an entity. It was picking up a burglar.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went downstairs, you know, armed to the teeth, with the kitchen knife is all I had. And there's all my gear down the bottom of the steps.
All your gear?
Yes, everything. The ultrasonics at the bottom, the stools at the bottom, and the wire, interestingly enough, this had a very short AC cord. It actually put the signals back through the AC lines in the house so that it didn't require any additional, you know, wiring of the building.
Right.
The deal was is that all of this was down the bottom of the rear steps. There were dents in the side of the walls on the steps and the ceiling above the steps where it had bounced and bounced and bounced on the way down.
It's like somebody threw it down.
That's exactly what had happened. That was when I decided that, you know, probably I shouldn't risk a Nikon or a Hasselblad.
I guess not.
Yeah. What it was more my wife's decision not to do.
Did you get any photographs?
No, I had. I was sort of thwarted in that regard by Linda saying, you know, I don't think you should risk the photographic equipment, because if they could do that, they could do anything else, because this was a physical.
All right, now you said, yeah, you said that going back to the water and the fact that you could hear some people arguing.
They were arguing over a child who apparently was sick.
All right, so you had a battling couple, apparently, a man and a woman?
Yes, it was a man and a woman, and we also had something else which apparently the cats could see, but we could not. Sometime later, just before we decided to make an end of this.
Do you know the history of the house?
The house was built in the early 1900s, around 1910 or 1911. And before my father purchased it, no, I had not checked that out. I still have not checked that out to see who owned it. but it could have been something to do with the influenza epidemic in the 20s. A child maybe died of it. And it all had to do with the second floor middle room and the hall adjacent to that. And the cats that we had, and I remember you saying not too long ago that you had experience with cats seeing things that you didn't see.
No, quite all the time, sure.
And when I had come back again once from doing something where I didn't want the cats to be involved, if I was painting anything, I used to put them in the bedroom. I heard one of them talking, and I thought, oh, well, they're awake, you know, I'll let them out. And when I went in, one was sitting on a chair, one was on the floor, the other was on the bed, and they were looking. This room basically has a bay window that faces west, and faces our yard, actually, on the third floor, and they were all talking. I tried talking to them. They didn't pay any attention. So I turned one around physically. Now, of course, they never bit us and they never scratched us. So they just simply, you know, tried to regain their original position with respect to that corner of the room.
Right.
They were looking just below the ceiling, which is very high, probably about 8 feet off the floor is where they were looking. And I couldn't see anything. So I went over and I opened up of the three windows, this would be the window left. I opened the shades on the window right. I opened the curtains. And out of the corner of my eye, not my central vision,
yes,
but my peripheral vision, I could see a darkness. And it looked sort of like what you would expect a gingerbread man to look like. That is to say, no definite limbs, but yes, there were what looked like legs, arms, and a head and a torso, but no real definition. No, you could not see, you know, a fingernail. You could not see.
Oh, brother.
And here's this thing, and I cannot hear it. I cannot see it.
All right, well, listen, we're way out of time here.
I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. I appreciate the story, and I hope all is well with you now. That's some tale.
Yes, we had that taken care of. We basically prayed it out of here.
All right, thank you, my friend.
You have a nice night.
You too. Great. I'm Art Bell.
I can see her lying back in her satin dress, in a room where you do what you don't confess. Sundown, you better take care if I find you've been creeping around my back.
There are those who say the veil between that side and this side is breaking down. I would tend to agree with those people. As you listen to the stories tonight, the contemporary stories, the ones that have literally happened in the last few days, in the last year or so, the frequency of these stories, the intensity of these stories, to me, kind of says something is changing. Has that occurred to any of you out there? Something is changing. Maybe the veil between here and there is beginning to slip away or change. I really don't know. I just listen. Remember, I'm doing this show tonight with a temperature of 100.5. So the flu is still with me, and it may have my thinking off kilter a little bit, and I may say things I ought not say, but is it not said that in the last days, the final days, the dead will rise? Is it not possible that in the days leading up to the end, the veil, and I call it that just because that's all I can think to call it, will begin to collapse? And I'm not suggesting these are the final days, but I guess I am suggesting there's a lot going on right now with regard to entities, ghosts, whatever you want to call them. An awful lot beginning to happen. You've got to wonder if it might not be the warm-up. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Oh, hi, I'm sorry. This is Melissa from Van Nuys, California.
Hello, Melissa.
I have a little ghost story, I guess, to tell you. I went to a friend of a friend's home in December for a little arts and crafts meeting with about five women.
Right.
I've never been to the house. I pull up, and it's a beautiful, very large house built in the early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
I walk in, and it's kind of got an interesting feeling about it, just as old houses do, but I don't think anything about that. All of the other women go to the library to sit, and I go to the kitchen to get a drink. And the kitchen is in three parts, kind of a U shape. You have to go through the pantry, the kitchen, and to another third room to the refrigerator.
Gotcha.
I get a drink, and as I'm walking back, I walk through a game room that has basically the only thing in it is a pool table. And as I'm walking past the pool table, a multicolored ball rolls past my feet really quickly. And it's like a baseball-sized rubber ball, like a kid's ball.
Right.
And when I had walked in the door, I'd noticed that the family had two cats. And I, of course, think it's one of the cats batting the ball at me.
Sure.
So I looked to the corner to see which little kitty had batted the ball, and the cats aren't there. And immediately what flashes through my mind is, okay, the ball went really fast, the floor's not uneven, something else did it, and I don't know what.
Right.
So I look to the library, which is about 500 feet away, and there are glass French doors where all the other women are, so to see if there's something going on, and the two cats are in there. So the cats could not have batted the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, it was really fast, and it rolled right past my feet and then stopped. I kind of get the hair on my arm stands up. I walk to this stranger's library and say, excuse me, to the lady who owns the house, you don't have ghosts, do you? Ha, ha, ha. And she said, the smile falls from her face, and she said, what did they do now? And I'm like, this has happened before. And she said, what did they do? Mm. And I said, well, a large ball rolled in front of my feet really quickly and stopped. And she said, yeah, well, they're kind of pranksters. And then she goes on to explain that her daughter, they had only lived in the house a few years. Her daughter had had some sort of a incident in the basement where the ghost had tripped her, and she'd sprained her ankle. Mm. And she'd finally gone into the history of the house because she didn't know what was going on. And it turns out they're the third family to own the house. The house was built in 1927. The original owners of the house had a very hard life, very hard time, lost a daughter to a very difficult circumstance, and the woman, who they feel is the person occupying the house still, was very sad, and so she started to tell me a bit about her, and she said her name was Mary Wells Brown, and she said, oh, I have a picture of her. And I said, oh, I'd love to see it, which I think is probably going to be a small snapshot. She said, I found a picture of her in the attic. Mm-hmm. And I've decided to honor her. I had this picture of her so she doesn't feel like I'm occupying her house and not honoring her. And I said, I'd love to see it. She touches a panel on the parquet wall, and the wall moves.
Really?
Yeah, revealing a hidden back room that is basically a shrine to this woman. There's a sepia-toned picture on the wall that's probably 2 by 3 feet with a carved wood frame hanging really far up above a fireplace, and I try to walk in the room, and I can't.
What do you mean you can't?
It's very cold to begin with, which it was December, so it could have been, except that this is California. But anyway, the room was amazingly cold. I put 1 foot in to get closer to the picture of the woman, and I feel like I'm trapped in molasses.
Good Lord. Oh.
And I'm like, I can't move. And the woman goes, you know what? That happens. I understand. So I literally back out of the room. I'm not even in control of myself enough to turn around and move. I can only back my foot out of the room to get back into the library again because I can't go in that room. I've never had an experience like that. I couldn't explain it.
Before this occurred to you, had you ever had an experience like this?
Never.
Had you been a believer in ghosts or spirits or life after death, or, you know, are you religious? What's your background?
Well, I am religious. I have a spirituality. Yes, I was raised Southern Baptist. I'm from Kentucky originally. I've lived in Los Angeles for 8 years, but I wanted to believe, sure. I mean, my mother passed away 9 years ago, and I'm an only child. And before she died, I was like, all right, look, you really have to come back. I really
death is not going to separate us. And I have not heard from her, so I'm a little pissed. But I'd wanted to believe, definitely, I've never had an experience like that in my life. Never.
And you're sure of what happened to you?
Absolutely.
Now, obviously, the woman in this house had encountered this whatever ghost so many times, she decided to build this shrine?
When I say shrine, I suppose I'm being overly dramatic.
Well, no, if you push a button and the wall changes and a picture comes out, that's a kind of a shrine. She had to go to a lot of trouble to do that.
No, I think the wall, that sort of secret room was always there. I think she made that Mary Wells Brown's secret room. I mean, she hung the picture there, you know, as it's like, all right, I'm giving her her own space so that she doesn't get honked off that we're here.
Well, that's going a pretty long way, isn't it?
Well, maybe.
Oh, my. All right, I really thank you for the story.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, you take care. To the point that she physically could not enter the room. It would be sure fun to get the story from the lady who showed her the secret passageway, the secret room, with the portrait of the woman. First time caller line, you're on the air on Ghost to Ghost AM. Good morning.
Good morning, Art.
Hi there.
How you doing? I'm calling from Akron, Ohio.
Akron, yes, sir.
I got a story about I went to school in a small town in Xenia, Ohio, and in 1974 they had a tornado there. Mm-hmm. And then on this campus of the school, they had what they call an armory. I'm sure you know what an armory is. You were in the military, am I correct?
Yes, of course I know.
At night, the kids were at the school would say that this armory was haunted, and I never believed it. And they used to roller skate inside this armory all the time in the early 50s and 60s, and I went there from between 84 and 87. And one night I was walking up to, we have our hospital on campus, and going past this armory, you could hear roller skating. In this armory at night.
Roller skating in an armory.
And to find out, back in 1974, they put all the people that from the town of Xenia, when they had a tornado, and they had an F5 tornado.
Oh, my God, and they put them in the armory.
Right, and none of the kids would go near this armory at night because it was spooked. They said it was haunted. And I've heard it from different people from the 50s, the 60s, and the 70s, you know. Well,
was the armory hit by the tornado?
No. No. They just think this armory's haunted, you know, people...
Obviously it was haunted by the children. The only time there would have been children there was, as you suggested, when they were there as a shelter.
Right.
So that brings up the specter of hauntings by the living, or the fact that some living person was there. This might not be a person who's yet passed away, and yet the echo of those people remains. It's kind of weird.
And you could plainly hear, it sounds just like someone roller skating.
No, I've got you. No, I understand. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. That's the other thing that I think I wanted to really bring up tonight, and that is, lately we've been hearing stories, apparent hauntings, from people who are still alive. Now, what does that say? Does that say that our spirits are one in life and in death, and that we're capable of having that spirit remain in a certain place, doing a certain thing, even though we still live as when we die? I don't know. It's fascinating. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hi. Hello? Hello?
Hello, sir.
Yes?
Yes, how you doing tonight?
I'm fine. Where are you?
Yeah, this is Dean in Tampa, Florida.
Hi, Dean.
Yeah, the last time we spoke, actually, for Ghost to Ghost, I had mentioned a story about a young lady named Clarity.
Oh, I remember the Clarity story, yes.
Yes, sir. I don't know if you want me to update the newer listeners, or it was quite a story, but I actually had an experience last year after telling that story that kind of connects the two.
All right. I don't know whether you ought to, if there's a way you can rush through the Clarity story.
Oh, trust me. I'll make it brief, sir.
All right. Go.
Basically, about 14 years ago, moved down to Grapevine, Texas. Went to a party with a friend of mine. Met a very nice young lady by the name of Clarity. I'd always taken the same route back home to Grapevine, but for some reason that night, when I took her home, who supposedly she lived right pretty close to where I lived in Grapevine, I wound up getting lost and wound up driving actually north to Oklahoma. So on the way there, we took a right turn and wound up in Denton, Texas that night, and she suddenly told me that she used to live there, and she told me, she kind of directed me around inside Denton, Texas, and we wound up in an apartment building. And I thought, she said she had some friends there, so I thought we were going to get a telephone or something like that, try to find some directions home.
Mm-hmm.
Well, suddenly we get out of the car, and there's a big hill on the left-hand side there. And she goes, let's go over the hill. I want to show you something. And I said, okay, I'm kind of curious. It's about 3 a.m. in the morning. You know, really pretty girl, so I'm pretty much up for anything right now.
Yeah, you're thinking, I'm going to get lucky.
Exactly.
I gotcha.
Yeah, it was tricks of lights and shadows, so I figured no problem. So we went over the hill, and suddenly I'm looking at a graveyard, and I've never been one to, you know, be doing the graveyard for fun type thing, but,
uh-huh,
you know, I'm kind of up for anything at this point.
Still,
so
you're thinking, she's really a fox. Let's
exactly
see.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, at this point, I'm pretty much signing my, you know, my truck over, so yeah. I'm like, no problem. So we're walking in, and there's a really huge stone gate, and on the right-hand side, it was almost looked like it had been hit by a tornado or something like that, but it was just demolished. Well, I didn't really say much about it because she kind of wandered in, and we were looking around, and suddenly I'm standing there, and it's an extremely, you know, dead still Texas night, and there's a full moon out, and I love full moons, all right, and I'm looking up at the full moon, and she's standing behind me, and suddenly to the left of me, I see 7 white birds, and they're all connected by the wing, and they're just floating up towards the moon, and I'm like, really, I'm watching this thinking, this is totally beautiful. I'm just, you know, I'm in awe. And suddenly from behind me, she starts speaking about Bible prophecy and about the 7 birds that will return her home. And as I'm looking up at the moon, and I'm looking at the birds, and I'm listening to her talk about the prophecy of the 7 birds and the returning home,
mm,
as the word home trails off, sir, I look around, and suddenly she's gone. And I'm... And at this
point, I would say probably at that point you were thinking, not so lucky.
No, yeah, definitely. Sobriety had now entered me 100%. I'm fully clear.
Now, let me get this moment again. She began talking as the 7 birds were flying. It was beautiful, full moon. She started talking about Bible prophecy,
yes,
right?
Sir.
And the next second?
As the word home, as she's saying return home, trails off, and I look around and I turn exactly to where she was standing. She is completely gone. I do a hard target search of the place because I'm still a gentleman. I'm not going to bail on her. But yet I'm looking hard, I'm looking low, and I'm thinking, well, maybe she just went, you know, returned home, or maybe went to a friend's house. Well, as I find out later, she truly did return home. Because about 2 years later, I come back to the same place in Denton, Texas, and I go up to a Texaco just right down the corner. And I'm talking to the guy at the counter, and I'm saying, you know, boy, I had kind of a strange experience back then. And he goes to relate the story about this girl who, I guess, a couple of her friends got into their dad's pickup truck, drove over the hill, wound up crashing into that very stone gate that I saw earlier before that was destroyed, and wound up getting killed on her prom night. And I'm thinking to myself, truly she had returned home. Well, here's the kicker, Art. I told you this story about a year ago at the same time.
That's right.
Well, there was a tremendous Texas storm at this time. I'm in Grapevine, Texas. I put the phone down. The moment, sir, I put the phone down, I look up. Across the street, I have a clear view of a transformer. A bolt of lightning hits the transformer, blows the transformer into it looked like the movie The Natural. Suddenly, boom, the lights go out. As I lay down the phone, I look across, and all you see is the moon. The moonlight goes inside the window. I look up, and I see 5 people standing inside my room. But yet, it looks like 3 women and 2 small children, and aren't... They're not there, but they're there, and it's like one of those adages. I've always felt that we're all surrounded by, you know, several different people in some sense, either from our past or present.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, when I put that phone down, the bolt of lightning, the moonlight, boom, I look up, and I wasn't shocked. It seemed like I almost accepted the fact that I'm an only child, but I never felt alone all my life.
Wow. Now that all this has happened, obviously you're a believer in what?
Well, all my life, sir, I believe we've all been connected by one way or another, and I think what it goes to show you is that we're just not here to be, you know, put in a box and put away. I think we connect from our past and our present, and if we truly do connect, I think we'll definitely get more clarity for the future.
Clarity. I appreciate the call, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. I agree with that man. Don't you?
Are we all here just to trot around in this mindless maze that's life on Earth and then get put in a box or get reduced to ashes? And that's all there is? I don't think so. I think the stories that you're hearing prove it. Not singly, not any one of them, but the evidence is absolutely cumulative. We are not just biological entities. We are more than that. And that's what you're hearing. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Good morning, Art.
Good morning. Where are you?
Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Tulsa. Good. Yes. Glad to have you.
Yeah, glad to be here. Hope you and your wife feel better.
Thank you.
My job takes me around the country, all over the country. My wife and I have lived here in Tulsa for the last year.
Right.
My immediate family lives in Montana. My mom, my brother and sister, nieces and nephews. For two weeks in November, I was in Oklahoma City. It was the day after the election. I stayed up all night watching the election returns. So the next night, I was tired, so I went to go to bed early, about 8:30.
Sure.
About 4 hours later, I'm awakened by someone in my hotel room. The room is completely black. I know there's a female figure in the room next to my bed. It's walking or by my bed. I know the presence is there. As I'm trying to figure out why that person is in there, I was thinking maybe it was the maid or something. You know, maybe I had been dreaming or waking up early and the maid was in the room.
It wasn't Al Gore saying, Florida's mine, Florida's mine, right?
I don't think it was.
All right.
didn't appear that way. But as I'm trying to, as I see this figure, I turn around and look, and this face appears toward me, comes toward me. It's a female face.
A face.
Comes toward me. Doesn't say anything, or at least I'm not hearing anything.
Yes.
And it comes toward me and then fades back.
Can you make out any detail?
Well, not at that time, but I relate the story to the guys I work with the next day. And I'm saying, well, maybe it was my sister, or I thought, well, maybe the room's haunted or something, or maybe it was the maid or something, or I was dreaming or something.
Yes.
But, anyway, that was late Wednesday night. The next day, I relate the story. Friday morning, I get a call from my wife saying, I have some bad news, that my niece has died. She committed suicide. Well, I find out, and I didn't connect it at the time, but I'm thinking, and I tell the guys this, well, maybe that was my niece that came to the room. So I go back to Montana for the funeral. I'm the one, the last person to view my niece before the funeral, and it was that face that I saw. I didn't recognize it at first. I thought maybe it was my sister, but then as I see my niece at the viewing, it was her face, and that's what I saw. She had come to the room when I was in Oklahoma City.
Well, you had quite an encounter, didn't you?
It was, yes.
All right, my friend. Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care. As I said, all of this is cumulative. But if you listen through the night and you don't believe when it's over, then you just haven't been listening or thinking. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM.
By the blue top wall, near the market stalls, of the hidden door she leads you to. These days, she says, I feel my life just like a river running through the air of the cat.
Wanna take a ride? Call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to call Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nine.
Actually, this is Ghost to Ghost AM, and we may be talking about more than just ghosts tonight. We'll continue with your stories in a moment. It's going to be quite a night, I absolutely guarantee. It already has been. By the way, next hour we're going to be concentrating on evil entities or ghosts, whatever it is you want to call them, the negative side. You know, the really scary stories, the ones with the glowing red eyes, the ones that are up to no good. I wonder how many of those are out there right now, and I wonder what that means.
A long time, and they wanted someone who would appreciate the home, and so my daughter got it, and they'd been in it about 5 months, and I went out to visit, and I hadn't been in the house 5 minutes. My daughter was helping me bring my suitcases up to the bedroom that they decided to put me in. And I walked into the bedroom, and I got the hair standing up on the back of the neck, etc. And I turned to her, and I said, I hate to tell you this, but there's somebody in this room. And she just went, oh, Mom. She said, you know, she said, she told her husband when they had moved in there, they started. I got the story then.
Oh, no, you can feel it. I mean, you said the hair on the back of your neck stood up.
Oh, yeah.
You absolutely can feel it. I've had that happen to me, and you're never wrong.
No, I know it.
If the hair on the back of your neck stands up,
yeah.
Something's happening big time.
There's somebody there.
Yep.
So anyway, she tells me what's been happening in the 5 months. I had not told anyone this. And since they had moved in, especially in the evening after they'd put their young daughter to bed, they would hear somebody walking in the upstairs hall. And originally, of course, they would think that their daughter had gotten up and was walking around. And so they'd holler upstairs like good parents, and then somebody would go up to put her back to bed, and
sure.
She'd be sound asleep.
Sure.
And they would have doors opening, particularly in that upstairs hall, and things like that going on. And so they wondered, and she knew, because I sense these things, she knew that I'd know if there was somebody actually in the house. And so I stayed in that room. Of course, they put me in the room that they thought she belonged in.
You stayed there, huh?
I stayed in that room, and I was there for about 3 weeks, and it was okay. When I encounter something like this, I talk to them, and I didn't have any problems. Well, after about 3 weeks, my guy flew out and joined us, and the first night that he spent in the room, I woke up in the middle of the night, and she was right in his face. She was leaning over the bed and within inches of his face. Now, I normally do not see them. I usually just feel them.
Oh, my. Could you clearly see this?
No, not clearly. But it was like, you know, when you just, it's like out of the corner of your eye. But, you know, when you just wake up, sometimes you can see what you don't see when you're fully conscious.
Yes, of course, yes.
And I could see this.
Well, obviously, then, you had made your peace with this entity.
Or she wasn't that bothered. She wasn't bothered by me. You know, I mean, she wasn't really bothered by them in the house. She just did her thing. She wandered around and opened doors and things like that. My granddaughter had been sleeping in that room just before I came. My daughter said, well, we're moving her out. You can stay in that room. Well, they were moving her out because she'd wake up screaming in the middle of the night.
I've got you.
Night.
But go back to this moment. I mean, here's this entity leaning over, right?
Leaning over him. And I woke up. I sensed this, saw this, and got first very scared, and then... Which I don't think of myself as a very possessive person, but I got angry. It was like, this is my guy. get out of here. I got angry, and I...
That was almost jealousy.
Yeah, and it was like, well, I didn't know what she would do. I knew, for some reason, I knew very quickly upon... going to the house that it was a woman, and she liked doors open, she liked the room neat, stuff like that. I just had a sense about it, but I didn't realize she was not happy with him being there.
He's messy. Let's rip this
She didn't want him in the room. She didn't want him there. I didn't know what she would do, so I got angry and essentially just said, you know, back off. So I just told her, I said, I calmed down, I started talking to her and said, look, you know.
My guy.
Yeah, my guy, leave him alone. We're only here for a short visit, we'll be gone soon. If you, you know, if you back off and leave us alone, I will leave the door open, I will keep the room neat, et cetera, the little things that she liked, and if not, you will have me to deal with.
All right.
Not that I knew what I would do.
Yeah.
But
tough lady.
But I was angry.
All right. Well, I appreciate the story.
Okay.
Thank you.
Anyway, we found out later who it actually was a woman, the last of the family that owned the house, had died in the house.
I see. Well, listen, if something like this happened, I'd like to have somebody like you around. Get the hell out of here. Thank you very much.
Uh-huh. Bye.
Bye. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning. Hello there.
Hello.
Yes, you're on the air, sir.
Oh, this is Mark from Richmond, Virginia.
Hi, Mark.
Good morning. I hope I can be as eloquent as your other speakers. It's kind of weird. Synchronicity, I guess. I'm a little bit early here. What about 6 minutes early? You were talking about red-eyed monster stories. You'd like to hear it.
Not monsters. I mean, you could think of them that way. What I said was, in the next hour, I wanted to get stories from people who saw what obviously is an evil entity. And to me, the scariest description of evil are these glowing red eyes that so many people have seen.
What happened to me, I was sleeping in a twin bed by myself, and I thought I was in a dream state, a lucid dream. I mean, because I could picture the bed and picture the wall, everything was as it was. And I noticed at the foot of the bed a figure, and the only way I could make out that it was a figure, the room was dark here. I mean, you know, no night lights or anything, but, and I've heard you mention this before, but honest to goodness, this is truth. The only reason I could make it out because it was blacker than
black.
Than black, than the room itself.
I understand.
And it had, I really couldn't make out any features initially, because it had like a loose fitting dark black shroud.
Oh, great.
Around it.
Yeah.
You know, if you've seen commercials for like the Grim Reaper or whatever.
Yes.
Sort of like that. And I thought I was dreaming. I'm still not sure exactly what was going on. And so I said, well, I'll just have this dream and take it on by myself, you know, and fight this entity.
Yes.
And kind of going one-on-one there for a minute. And all of a sudden, I had the sensation of being levitated, lifted off the bed.
Were you, in fact, lifted off the bed?
What happened, Art?
I tell you what, this is just a great cliffhanger. We're coming to a break, so I'm going to have you hold it right there, okay?
Sure.
All right. An entity darker than dark is in your room. You're levitated. You're off the bed. We'll get back to the story in a moment.
She doesn't remember me. Oh, what else? Anyway. But then I I wasn't planning on interviewing someone that night. I finally said, are you the one that dropped the water on me?
And?
The answer was yes. One of the things was that he said that he was trying to get to the other side and needed help. It came out that he and I had come from the East Coast in another life.
All right, so the tears then were a kind of a plea to help, a plea for help to get to the other side, right?
To get me to go to that meeting.
get you to go to the or right, right. But the ultimate plea, though, was to help that entity go through.
Right.
Okay, I think I've got it. Thank you. Tears from nowhere. That entity wanted help to get to the other side. Which means that entities are trapped here. Obviously, then, for a period of time, ranging from no doubt almost a non-existent amount of time to forever. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, this is Elizabeth in Medford.
Hi, Elizabeth.
Hello, you'll have to pardon me, I'm starting to get the flu too, so if I sound funny, that's why. I have a story about a, I guess you'd have to say malevolent spirit that caused people to get physically and go emotionally ill.
You mean permanently, emotionally?
Well, until they left the house. But the people who were living in the house, we moved into it when I was about, I was about 8 or 9 years old
mm-hmm.
in 81. And it was in Newcastle, Indiana, on what we figured out was Indian burial grounds. They had built attractive houses that were perfectly lined up, step down, step down, step down. And
right.
We didn't think anything of it at first, but my mom's boyfriend, over the course of living there, started to act really weird. Well, we didn't think much about it because, you know, sometimes that happens. But our next-door neighbor was what proved it out. They had, it was a nice little young family, a husband and a wife and a little boy. Well, as soon as they moved in next door, they started having weird things happening. Toilets flushing by themselves, cats tracking things across the room that nobody else could see, cold hands on people's shoulders, just weird stuff. But nothing you could put your finger on, really. And then their little boy got sick with something that couldn't get diagnosed. At first they thought he had anything from leukemia to cat scratch fever. It was something to do with his immune system, but he was getting sicker and sicker by the day.
Gotcha.
Didn't know what was wrong with him. And on top of that, their marriage was completely disintegrating. Well, you could chalk that up to just having a bad marriage. But they moved out. They said, you know, their marriage broke up, they left. Well, that, you know, that you could have just left that as a coincidence. Well, the next people that moved in, a wife, a husband, a little boy, same thing happened. As soon as they moved in, the little boy started to get ill. And the husband and the wife started fighting. Well, she was a bit more open-minded, and we had talked to her. My mom was open to ghost stories and things like that and had told her about the previous couple. Well, she said, there's this room that every time I go into it, I want to just about kill my husband. If I go in there, I feel like if we're even sitting in there having a good time,
mm-hmm.
I want to just beat him up.
Rage.
Yeah. And so she ended up being a good friend of my mom's, and she let my sisters use the house for their prom date after the prom because the high school was right across the way. It was a four-way stop.
Sure.
And they ended up in the TV room, which was the room where the arguments happened. Well, they had no knowledge about this because my mom didn't tell them. She didn't want to scare them. And their prom date went from being a happy, you know, regular boy-girl thing.
The way
couples,
it ought to be, yeah.
Yeah, to just complete hatred among all the couples. All the men and women ended up fighting, didn't tell each other about it until later. This all came out later on, that this room was the focus of the rage. And the nearest that we could figure out was, because it was all focused on men, the women felt angry, but the men were the ones that seemed to suffer from it. I mean, they went from being normal, happy-go-lucky.
It happens that way so frequently.
Yeah, you know, normal, happy, lucky guys, but then all of a sudden they just got dark.
Yes.
They got dark, and they got depressed, and they got sick. And the little boys got sicker and sicker and sicker. Well, finally she's like, you know, if this is the precedent set here, I'm leaving. I'm not sticking around for this. And she left the house. Well, her kid got better. By then the marriage was over, but, you know, there was nothing that they could do about it by then. Well, every person that has moved into that house since then, she's kept up with it, has had the same problem. And the only thing that we could figure out is that something must have happened to a woman. Because the focus, I lived in the house, my mom lived in the house, my two sisters. We never had anything weird happen to us other than some odd ghostly things. But nothing dark and evil. But
something bad happened to some woman.
Something bad, and she was angry about it and taking it out on the men living there. And when I was a little kid, I wouldn't go to bed in my house by myself in that house. I had to have somebody come with me and stay with me till I was asleep. The day we moved out of that house, we moved into a Victorian across town, which in and of itself looked like a scary house. But I got up at when it was time for me to go to bed, walked upstairs, went to bed. No questions asked. Just did it all by myself.
Mm-hmm.
And the next day, my mom sat me down, and she's like, well, honey, why did you do that? You usually have me come and stay up there. I said, we lived in a bad house, Mom. This is a good house. This doesn't have anything in it.
That is some story. That's really some story. I appreciate your call.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. Can you imagine that? What is that? Is that an entity remaining, injecting its hatred into everybody who occupies the room? Or again, is it some sort of echo of hatred, memory of hatred, some kind of living memory, whether it's a living person who was there or somebody who's passed away? Is that hatred then infecting everybody who occupies the same space? So does that mean then that entities or just this raw hatred can occupy a place forevermore or until released? I don't know. There are so many questions generated by stories like this. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hi.
Is that me?
That's you.
Hi, my name's Barbara. I'm calling from Enumclaw, Washington.
Welcome.
When I was 17, my mother died very unexpectedly. In fact, she was out of the country, and I received a phone call saying, well, she's dead. And I grieved painfully for her, and I grieved for not ever having the chance to say goodbye to her. And about 6 months after she died, I was physically becoming ill. I lost a tremendous amount of weight, took a lot of drugs, drank a lot, and was basically self-destructing. And I was over at a friend's house in the middle of the afternoon, sitting on their bed, and I looked up, and I saw my mother walking towards me down a staircase, and she looked radiant. She actually looked younger and thinner and healthier than I could recall her ever looking. She looked beautiful.
Yes.
And I jumped up to run and embrace her, and she said, I'm sorry, but this is taking so much of my energy to appear to you that you can't put your arms around me. But you can talk to me. So I was telling her how much I missed her, and she said she was aware of that and that I needed to stop grieving, and she was in a much better place. And then she asked me, would I like to come with her? And
to that place?
To the place where she was now.
All right,
We're
at a break point here. I have to break, so hold it right there. It's a good place to hold it anyway, all right?
All right.
You went to this place?
I did.
Uh-huh. We'll pick it up right there when we get back. I'm Art Bell.
Very different, separate energies.
Maybe.
Maybe it was the same, and it was just playing tricks on me because, you know.
That's what they do.
And I hadn't been drinking.
I'm with you. All right. All right. Thank you very much. It seems to happen to those who drink and snort and smoke as well as those who are stone cold sober. So make of that what you will. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Well, I have a very scary story that I've had a lot of not-so-scary ghost encounters since, but this particular one happened when I was about 16 or 17 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a friend who was really afraid of, I guess she'd seen The Exorcist or something, and she was horrified at the prospect of ever being possessed.
Of course.
And, you know, she was very rigidly Catholic, and I was not really all that paranoid about that. And I said, well, you know, I believe in God strongly enough that if Satan ever came after me, I'd know I'd win.
And I went to bed that night.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to kind of meditate to go to sleep. And so I kind of, you know, meditated to go to sleep. I was very into stuff like that. And I remember just kind of getting down a nice, quiet, calm place. And I felt, suddenly, I felt something cold above me. Icy.
Above
cold.
You. Above you.
Above me.
You know, there are a lot of people, my dear, who say that meditation opens the door.
Well, I know that now. I didn't really know that then. I was only about 16 or 17. I'm in my late 30s now.
And for some reason, 16 or 17-year-old girls are particularly subject to this sort of thing. We don't know why. Anyway,
yeah.
Anyway, something cold above you.
Something cold. And I think you have a lot of energy then.
Yeah.
You're very young and fresh. And I... You know, I looked up. I opened my eyes. Now, I know I wasn't asleep. You know, I've thought about this hundreds of times. I wasn't asleep. There on my ceiling, between myself and my ceiling, which was, normal 8-foot-high ceiling.
Yes.
Over my bed was this green, glowing green thing. It looked like a big amoeba, but it was black in the center, and as it got... from the center outwards, which was probably the width of my bed or thereabouts, It got tinged with yellow and then green. It was like a fluorescent amoeba around the edges.
Starting to sound like something from Ghostbusters.
Oh, no. This thing was... The Ghostbusters was tame. I looked at this thing and I could... It looked like it was pulsating. And in my head, I heard this voice. And it was so metallic. It was, "We need you, we need you, we need you.
We need you."
It was so metallic that it sounded like a machine had generated. Like, you know, you pick up the phone and it's the operator and it says to put in the number or whatever, and it's very generated.
Yes, oh yes, of course.
And I was so terrified. And so I said, "Oh, God." And I tried to pray. Does that make sense?
It makes sense to me.
I couldn't pray. And I felt myself get sucked out, like out of my head, out of my body. And I felt myself go into this black void. And I couldn't do anything. I thought, "Oh, my God, where am I going?" And then I just got, "No way. I'm not going to let this. No way." The thought was just, "No way." And I was back in my room. My room was cold. I remember I got up. My parents were still up in the other room. And I walked out, and I'm like, "Oh, you know, I just had this." And of course, they didn't believe me. But
they didn't believe you?
Oh, no.
But they didn't hear, "We need you. We need you.
No, they didn't. No, they didn't. But that area has had a lot of activity, of different types of activity. And, you know, we've since then seen things in my dad's house and, you know, different things. But it's definitely, I think what I did was I challenged something. And... in the end, I think I won, but I was scarred for years from that. I couldn't meditate for years.
"Come across with us."
That was sort of like what it was, only it was more metallic.
More
pretty scary.
Metallic, even more metallic. Deep,
was,
come with us.
If you got to change the pitch on that there, Art. Just kind of make it really metallic.
I don't know what to say about you. That's a scary one, all right. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
You're
Take
welcome.
Care. First time caller line, you're on the air on Ghost to Ghost AM. Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning to you.
I have a pretty scary story for you.
All right.
I have not spoken of this in 20 years. Matter of fact, my friend and I, we haven't spoken of it at all in probably the last 10 years. We used to belong to one of the oldest deer hunting clubs here in South Carolina. And we were hunting with dogs this particular Saturday. Of course, this area is rich in Civil War history.
Sure.
Anyway, story short, we had collected our dogs that we were hunting with. It was getting pretty late in the evening. And we rounded this curve in the road. We were back in a very remote area that had only been hunted maybe twice in the last 10 years. We had around 18 head of dogs with us. These dogs stopped suddenly and doubled back, just startled, just doubled back.
Hmm.
They stopped. They were barking. just jumping around, hair bristled, you know, fangs pretty much bared, scared the hell out of us, you know. And it was misty looking, but what we saw on the edge of the woods was what appeared to be three figures. And they kind of looked at each other like, okay, you know.
Three figures.
Three figures. They appeared to be soldiers, like old Civil War soldiers, Confederate soldiers.
Really?
But you could not make out enough detail. You know, when the reason we thought Confederate soldiers, because you could see the hats, the short-brimmed hats.
Gotcha.
Okay. But what happened, we just stood there frozen. I don't know about him. I was scared to death. But we heard just a low voice saying, "Leave us alone. Stay away. You're not wanted here."
Oh, that'd do it for me.
And this gets very freaky. This was repeated 3-4 times. We took off in a dead run. Our truck was around the other side of around this long curve. It felt like we had concrete blocks strapped to our feet. But could not get the truck doors open. When I got on my side, I could not get it open.
Yes, sir.
And we both hit the ground. I felt just an enormous heat come over me. Started vomiting, projectile vomiting. Trembling, and still heard the voice saying, "You're not wanted here. Stay away. Leave us alone." This went on, I'm guessing, probably 15, 20 minutes. Till finally we were able to get up, regain our composure, and get in the truck. We left dogs and everything.
You left the dogs?
We left the dogs. The dogs have no part of this. They were gone.
Uh-huh.
And I know this may sound amusing on one hand, but believe me, it was very terrifying. We got into the truck, got completely out of the hunting. It was about 5 miles back to the main highway. And we had to stop several times. It's only a 30-mile trip from our club back into the city of Columbia. We had to stop several times in fear of wrecking. And we were both very sick, very ill.
But, so this was no dream.
This was no dream.
This was no dream state.
This was not alcohol-induced. This was not a redneck club. This club was comprised of doctors, lawyers, law enforcement personnel. My pastor was the president of it.
Well, one good thing, sir, you can follow directions. I have a feeling if you had not gotten out of there, you probably wouldn't be here now.
Well, I will say this to you, that the story goes that, see, our clubhouse is sitting on what is considered the old Sumter Highway.
Tell you what, can you hold?
I certainly can.
All right, stay right there. We'll finish the story after the break. The evidence is cumulative, and it becomes overwhelming, doesn't it? You get our final hour. We'll be right back with more.
And we figured we were all so smart, ha ha ha. Well, my buddy dared me for $100 go in the house. And if the thing is, if you go into the house, and nine bad things will happen to you.
That was a Canadian $100, I guess.
Yeah, I was hoping it would have been American, but it was a Canadian. $100 is $100. So I'm like, all right, you're on. I didn't think nothing of it, and so I'm like, whatever. I get up there, and I'm just shaking. I can feel this. It's like dark, and I can see the shadows moving. I'm like, it's just trick of the car lights. I get up. And I put my foot in, I'm about 2 feet in, and I see the shadow come towards me, and I get all icy, I'm all cold, and this bird just flies right over my head. I'm out of there like a bat out of heck, because I'm terrified of birds, and I go booking back to the car, and they're all laughing at me. I'm like, okay, whatever. And we end up going back home because it's late and everyone's tired. So we drop everyone off, and we go to my buddy's place, and he's way up in the west end of the city, in what we like to call the ghetto part. It's like the poorer side of town.
Mm-hmm.
And we were watching the videotape. And we're watching the videotape of when I go in to the into the house.
Yes.
When I come running out, there's no bird. It's a giant shadow that chases me out.
Do you have that on tape?
This is where it gets even weirder. We watched the tape one night. We went to go see some friends the next day. It's no longer on there. Our entire night was totally off the tape. We over the original tape that was used. We had some stuff we recorded from a week before of just goofing around, and we taped over top of that. That's what was left. The actual ghost part was gone. This is where it gets even weirder. This is where the nine things kick in. My car started breaking down and so on and so forth. And then 9 days later, at my buddy's place, one night his Rottweiler just went berserk. Like, it started growling and barking at nothing. And the whole house, his house is normally like about 25 degrees. He likes it warm. Chilled. And he never gets scared. Him and his girlfriend ended up barricading themselves inside the bedroom with the dog, who wouldn't leave the bedroom. He would not. Like, they were just utterly petrified. He called me up, and I've known him for about 15 years, or I've never heard fear in his voice before, and he was petrified. And this kept on until sunrise. We thought nothing of it. 9 days after that, I'm sitting at work like I am now in the office, and I'm guarding the hotel, and I come on at midnight, and I go until 8 in the morning. And I'm sitting here, and all of a sudden, I'm totally, utterly petrified. I could not move from the office. I could not go outside. I had a feeling if I went outside that office door, I'd be killed. I was that petrified.
You know, this is really sounding more like a curse.
It's almost what it was, but this is...
The nine curse.
This is where it even gets weirder. I phoned him up, and I'm like, I'm petrified. I totally freaked right out. I was doing my checks on the building, my security checks. Normally, I walk through. I ran through all four floors and downstairs to the basement and ran back into this office. I did it. Normally, it takes about 20 minutes for a check. I did it in 5.
Hmm.
And I had him all on the phone all night, and I was petrified. And him and me got to talking. And we noticed that between the 9 days from his place to here, we're on the same 100 block. It's in a straight line. And we noticed that within those 9 days, this one guy ended up going, who had a sort of a bad background, but one night he went berserk and started shooting through the wall with a shotgun.
What?
Yeah. In the same 100 block on the straight line. Another girl was murdered in that 9 days. More break and enters, more violent crimes, all the way in a straight line. And I'm like, well, hand me a map. So we mapped it out, eh? And it's all in a straight line. And we continued watching, like, the news and newspaper, and in a straight line, straight out where that house is...
That's a total nightmare.
Where that barn is, that house where we went to...
Yes.
...is directly in a straight line from that house, to the hotel...
Yep.
...to his house.
I think I've got it.
And in straight through, it was nothing but evil, right through...
The nines. All right, we'll call that story the nines. I appreciate the call. That sounds like a curse, doesn't it? Would it be almost unbearable, wouldn't it, watching something like that unfold once you had figured out what was going on and you had it plotted on the map the way he did, to watch it unfold and just move across nines? Ugh. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
Yeah, I've got some good ones for you. I grew up in a haunted house.
You grew up in a haunted house?
I grew up in a haunted house.
Okay, well, pick your best one and let's
hear it. Okay, you want very evil?
We'll take evil.
Okay, I was living in a house in Maryland, and evidently the area was all woods at one time. I have no idea what drew this thing to this house, but from the time we had moved in, things were going on. I would spend all day cleaning a room, and within 15 minutes, it was a total disaster again.
With nobody going in?
With nobody going in the room.
Uh-huh.
One particular night, I had started sleeping on the couch for some reason upstairs in the living room, and the couch was across from the picture window. I felt the couch rocking head to toe.
You've already done more than I would have done. I mean, if somebody was screwing up these rooms after you cleaned them,
you could either only presume somebody was going in and, you know, messing with your work, or...
There was something going on, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And so,
well, I thought it was poltergeist activity because I had two young ladies in the house, and I figured it would pass.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when the couch started rocking back and forth,
mm-hmm.
I came slightly awake, and I said, no, it's my imagination. I'm asleep. Nice write-off, right?
Oh, sure.
Until I felt two hands go down on my ankles, lift me solidly off the couch, and hurl me toward the window.
What?
Uh-huh.
It picked you up by the ankles and threw you toward the window?
Yeah. I came full awake. I yelled, Lord, send help now, and I hit the floor.
Whew, and?
I turned around, and it had nice glowing red eyes.
And,
I left the house. Sat outside all night.
No, I take it the Lord did not immediately intervene. Otherwise, red eyes would have been gone, right?
He didn't get rid of them, but he made it stop so I wasn't going through the window. And as far as I know, red eyes is still there. Because I've moved halfway across the country, and from what I've heard, the people that bought the house have tried to rent it over and over again. Nobody stays in this house more than 5 months.
Did you know, not too many people know, but did you know that in a lot of places, the law says that if you have a haunted house, you have got to notify potential buyers of that fact, under the law?
Yes. That wasn't the case in Maryland.
Maryland's a pretty haunted place. There's no question about that.
I did tell friends of mine, and they kept saying, well, get the place exorcised. We tried that. It came back.
You actually went to an exorcist?
We went to one of the priests in town who did the floral blessing of the house. This thing would come and go at will.
Well, I appreciate the call. I don't like things with red eyes. I've never liked things with red eyes. To me, for some reason, that is evil personified, red glowing eyes. I don't know why I feel that way, but I do. Evil personified. Nightmare stuff. West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hi, Art.
Hi.
Hi, I got a story from you from Okinawa.
Okinawa?
Yes.
I spent, as you know, over a decade on the island of Okinawa.
I was stationed there from 94 to 97.
Really?
Yes. And during that time, my neighbor was a pilot.
Listen, I just realized I'm close to a break. Can you hold on?
Sure.
All right, a story about Okinawa. This will be good. Stay right there. I'm Art Bell.
A very old friend came by today. He was telling everyone in town of the love that he just found and the reason of his latest friend. He talked and talked, and I heard him say that she had the longest, whitest hair, the prettiest green eyes anywhere, and the reason
they describe it. And I would put the books down.
So was it ever so annoyingly hot that you would intentionally call on whatever this was to get it cold?
That's a good idea. I'll think about that this summer when our electric bill comes in.
Yeah.
But I would put it down, and then I would go look through the Bible to see what kind of scriptures that said, and then, you know, it would, dissipate. And then every time I would go read these books, it would get absolutely so cold. And I just thought, I didn't think anything about it, well, except for cool, you know. I was ignorant, I guess. I didn't really think anything about it. I guess after a week, I was reading, and I kept feeling like there was something watching me, following me around, and it would just be a really weird presence in the house. Mm-hmm. My husband was working, the baby would be napping, or he would look at something like he was like a cat track something, and he would start crying. And I would think, what is going on? And this would go on. And then I was at the kitchen sink. It's an old house, you know, with the window, those old, neat, deep sinks, deep sinks. I was washing dishes, and I wasn't thinking about anything that I was reading. It was just a very hot, sultry day, and all of a sudden, Art, I felt these very thick, cold, icy fingers touch my shoulders, move up to my neck, wrap around my neck, and gave me a gentle squeeze.
Oh, my God.
That's about what I said, too. And it scared me. I don't remember what I did. I think I was too scared to even say, oh, God. I just could not move. And there was this always when I would feel like something was following me, and especially at that time when those icy fingers touched me, there would be this awful kind of like boiled egg smell in the house.
Rotten eggs, yes.
Yeah, rotten eggs, right.
Sulfur, actually.
Sulfur, that's right. But that was the most empty, void of any kind of compassion light or whatever evil sensation I have ever felt.
After hearing your whole story, I'd rather suffer the heat.
Yeah, really, that's why we probably won't, you know, call on that thing this summer. But when you have a toothache, you know how it hurts so bad you don't know how, you think, gosh, is my jaw that deep?
Right.
That's how cold I felt, so deep inside my soul. I didn't realize that I was really that thick. It was so deep. Well, after that, I thought, forget this noise. So I took all those books, I took them to the patio, put them in our hibachi, and I torched the things.
Wow.
And that, I have never had anything happen like that since. Not like, we've had things happen, but not like that, not evil.
Well, that sure is some story, man.
Well, thank you for the time.
Take care, Deb.
Oh, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, well, so then, is it an entity that was attached to those books? Could some of those books just have been inherently evil in some manner? A cold thing that would eventually reach up and grip your neck? I don't blame her. I would have burned them too. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. How are you?
I'm all right, sir. Where are you?
I'm in Nashville. My name's Jeff.
Yes, sir.
I guess what my story kind of starts, I was in sixth grade, and I have a younger brother who's about 18 months younger than me, and we used to visit an elderly couple in an old house that was next door to us.
Mm-hmm.
It was a small town, and our house sat beside this old house, and then right beside it was a big church. And we used to go there every day, basically, just to catch up with them, tell them how our day was and everything. And every time we were over there, we only stayed in the kitchen of the house. But every time we were over there, there would be a door that would slam, and it would come from upstairs. And, we didn't think anything of it, my brother and I. It's just, but one of the couple would always go upstairs after the door had slammed.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the only two that lived in the house, and they were always in the kitchen with us when it happened. And, I didn't think anything of it. And I was upstairs only once in the house, and the elderly man was giving me some stamps. And it happened that the door slammed again while we were up there. It kind of was like, well, it's an old drafty house. It kind of looked like one of the, from a Scooby-Doo mansion,
yes.
The rest of the house outside of the kitchen was modern, but the rest of the house just absorbed light. It was so dark. The wood was so dark. And
sure.
It was kind of creepy, but, I never felt ill at ease there. But I got into high school, and I was at a hayride, and one of the girls who was out of high school knew most of the folklore about the town, and she was telling us that there was a house next to a church in town where someone had committed suicide. And and I was like, well, which church? Because there was about three churches in there. And she told me it was the Presbyterian church, and sure enough, that was the house that I used to live next door to and would go to every day and, hear this door slam upstairs. And this is where it gets a little creepy. One Halloween, we had taken pictures outside of me and my brother and my younger sister out in the yard with that house in the background.
Right.
And we had a strange occurrence on the film itself. It looked like, you know what a double exposure looks like.
Of course.
But, oh, man, it's creeping me out.
What was it that you saw in that photograph?
There was, it was a picture of me and my brother and my sister.
Right.
And it was like our body or our presence had shifted all the way over and away from where that room is in the background of the picture. And our presence had kind of shifted over away from ourselves. It was, but that our bodies were the only thing that were double exposed in the that looked double exposed in the picture. And
ooh,
there was, oh, it was a little vaporous kind of thing going on there too. It was a you know, and we'd taken like three pictures outside that day of us in our Halloween outfits, and the one with the room in the background was the only one that was different.
Well, then I've got to ask you the same thing. Do you still have the photograph?
I believe my mother has it, and I think she has a scanner, so I'll have her look for that, and I'll send it to you.
Boy, we live in some day and age, don't we, when Mom has a scanner.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
Well, all right, I appreciate your call and your story, and I wish we had more time, folks, but we are out of time, as it were. Sorry about that. It always rushes by. Ghost to Ghost is, as I said, something we're going to be doing more of during the year than just, you know, at Halloween, because it's so interesting and because things are changing out there. We're beginning to, I don't know, we're getting close to a big change, don't you think? I do. Have a good night, everybody, and tomorrow night is going to be very, very interesting. Brittany Petros from Big Brother is going to be here, and then we're going to have a guest on reality TV. It's going to be a different kind of night, but I think you're going to enjoy it. I'm Art Bell from the high desert, the desert of the sea. Good night.